Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. Going to be talking about the fiscal cliff. Oh, my God, this guy's falling. Look out. Look out. It's falling. It's falling. The fiscal cliff. The fiscal cliff. Come on. It's falling. Didn't you see it? Come on. It's right before us. We're coming up. Another one of these wonderful moments where the crisis is building. Bomb is ticking. The end of the road is near. And who's going to benefit? Well, if we allow the Republicans to do what they've been doing for the last couple of years, well, the wealth class will benefit. Because all of the argument is over, well, that 1 or 2%, right? Because I think most people agree. Yeah, hey, leave the tax rates where they are for the working people in this country. But the folks who have done wildly well, you know what? Times are tough. We need to go back to the, at least to the Clinton years, as meager as that was. And I'm also of the mindset, well, you know, let them expire. Let people feel a little pinch and go, oh, wait a minute. You in Washington, you in Harrisburg, you across the country, do something. Your job. Just a thought. You know, and, you know, I look at all of the rhetoric and, well, this wasn't a mandate to raise taxes. Yeah, I think what happened on Tuesday was pretty much a mandate. Obama won 332 to 206. I would say that's a pretty big victory. His victory was bigger than Kennedy's in 1960 and beyond the popular vote margin, bigger than Nixon's in 68, bigger than Carter's in 76. Bigger than George W. Bush's either time. In fact, you know, you think of George W. Bush when he was appointed, actually lost the popular vote. And boy, the right, they really wanted that, didn't they? I mean, didn't you watch Tuesday night where they knew going in they were going to lose, but they were really hoping. And I kind of thought that they had done enough suppression, they had done enough to hold down the vote to where they could suppress a couple million votes. And then they would win the popular vote and still lose the electoral vote. And I think they knew that, so that what they were going to do, and we had talked about it up until, is that they would try to delegitimize. So now what they're saying is, well, you know, this wasn't a mandate to raise taxes. This wasn't a mandate to change what 2 years the Republicans kept preaching. Yeah, it was. And I look at some of the really good overreactions by the radical right, because, man, they can't wait. Oh, I've heard so many people, and I've seen so many of the email lists that I'm on of people going, I'm leaving the country. We've got to now stand and fight back, and we've got to do something. The guy at the Heritage Foundation, you gotta love the day after. You know, we're talking about the next day after, you know, hey, bipartisanship, you know, we want to come together. And, well, they're saying, it's still war.
We are in a war.
Oh.
We're in a war to save this nation, and abandoning our post will condemn it to a future of managed decline. Over the last 4 years, the conservative movement has grown stronger as more and more Americans recognize the bankruptcy of President Obama's vision.
You know, I could see that ad on Monday, but on Wednesday? No. You lost. Your ideology lost. Lost. But, you know, they'll double down.
To win this war, we must remain committed to fighting President Obama's agenda.
Yeah, we're gonna fight his agenda. You know, that Obamacare, Obamacare. Because according to their video, they believe that should be left up to entrepreneurs. Isn't that what we were kind of moving away from? I mean, is it just a thought here? But isn't the rescission, which we haven't heard a lot about since it's been done away with, isn't that something that we wanted to get rid of? The caps on coverage? Something? But I love some of the really extreme ideas, and I got a bunch of those emails of people going, well, it's the end of the country. The country's doomed. We're going to decline. We're a horror. We're going to die. It's the end. And I loved in that video, the Heritage, they used the Reagan quote from 48 years ago.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny. We'll preserve for our children this, the last best hope of man on earth, or we'll sentence them to take the last step into 1,000 years of darkness.
Oh, man, isn't that a great line? 1,000 years of darkness. But here's the thing. They've been saying this for generations. I mean, all of this heated rhetoric, all of this nonsense. Victoria Jackson. Remember Victoria Jackson?
I am the Tea Party people.
She tweeted out that, "I can't stop crying. America died. It just died." Ted Nugent said in his little tweet, "Good luck, America. You just voted for economic and spiritual suicide. Soulless fools." Ah. Neil Bortz said, "Obama's a bigger disaster than Sandy, but the media didn't create Sandy. They did create Obama. So they feel free to report the destruction." The Cincinnati Tea Party on their website put up death. America died July 4th, 1776, November 6th, 2002. Death was ruled suicide. So, hey, someone agreed with Nugent. Suicide. I wonder if they're on the same page. Lintball said, "I went to bed last night thinking we've lost the country." Yeah, your bizarre ideology, your failed policies, your twisted mentality. Yes, yes, you have lost what you thought was the country. Absolutely. Because you're wrong. You've been wrong all along. The policies you put forth have always been wrong for most of us. For, you know, people like you and the very, very wealthy. Yeah, more handouts for them. It works wonderfully. But for the vast majority of the people, not so much. And I loved how he went after Obama and said, "Well, you know, he treats them like vaginas. And they say he's my man." I'm not quite sure what that means, but, you know, with that kind of talk, you're not going to get the female vote. It's not going to happen. I loved Donald Trump, though, calling for revolution. He said, again, this is when they really thought that they were going to carry the popular vote. Donald tweeted out, "He lost the popular vote by a lot and won the election. We should have a revolution in this country." But he didn't lose the popular vote. Actually, like 3 million votes up. And they're still counting. Maybe the hair got in his eyes. Maybe that's it. And I love, Glenn Beck. And I don't generally go after what other talk show hosts say, but this was just so far out there. And this is the kind of stuff that, really, we need to figure out how to get rid of people like Beck. People need to tune this off. This stuff is just toxic for the brain. He said, "I won't make a deal with the devil." He said, "I'll tell you. Last week, we purchased more farmland as a family. May I recommend that if you have the chance to buy farmland, you buy farmland? If you live in the East, may I recommend you get the hell out of the East? Find a place where you are surrounded by like-minded people. And the best way to find those people is, you should probably look how they voted in the county maps." And he goes on, this whole, I highly recommend you get grandfathered into the Second Amendment. And, oh, don't forget to buy ammunition. And the whole right-wing rant of, well, you know what, we're not going to be able to have business. Businesses will be put out of business because Obama's going to come with his regulation because he's anti-capitalist. And you go, hold on. You mean the guy who's saving capitalism because it was eating itself? The capitalist model, the cancerous model was eating itself? In 2008, when it was collapsing and dying, the guy who injected some stimulus to get the motor running again, a little transfusion to get the blood pumping, that guy, the guy who has done almost everything you could possibly do to help business, yet time and time again, I hear, oh, it's all these regulations. Name them. I was talking to a guy the other day, coal's going to die. Name the regulation that Obama put into place that's going to kill coal. It's not there. It doesn't exist. What's going to kill coal is natural gas. Understand that. The quote-unquote free market. And I listen to these right-wing idiots who just spew off nonsense. Like this girl, 18-year-old girl from Georgia. Republican, Kristen Neal, her name is. All distraught after the election. Got on her little Twitter phone and tweeted out, "I'm moving to Australia because their president is a Christian and actually supports what he says." Only problem is, The person who's in charge of Australia is a woman, and, oh, don't forget, an atheist, and, oh, don't forget, living in sin with a man she's not married to. You kind of gotta wonder, what the hell is she thinking? Oh, that's right, she's not. She's reading emails that are 4, 5, 6 years old. Because how many people have gotten that email? I must have gotten it 1,000 times. And what it is, it's a hodgepodge of, it's written by a think tank. But it's a hodgepodge of a former military, a U.S. military officer, and statements by former prime ministers John Howard and Kevin Rudd. You know, and the email's full of, you know, jingoistic rhetoric and chest thumping and you learn our language or you get the hell out. You know, because it's those Muslims. You know, like the black guy in the White House. I mean, what's amazing to me is these people, they live in this little bizarre, twisted world where facts don't seem to matter. Fake news on Fox, that's all they care about. That idiot Beck, go buy farmland. Oh, yeah, let's all go out and buy farmland. We've all got those kind of resources. Anybody listening to him say that should be tuning the dial. Because he's not you. He's not me. What he's pushing forth is a destruction of this country so he can say, see, I was right. And all of this doomsday, we've been hearing this stuff for years. You know, you go back and listen to the Reagan speeches of the 60s. You know, where he was the conservative. They had just flipped him with a bunch of money. Look, I mean, he was a spokesman for a big corporation. They'd given him a ton of money. And they said, you know what? You're going to be president. We're going to make you president. We're going to push you. Made him governor of California and then president because he bought into their conservative ideology, which is not conservative at all. It's corporatist. It's how do we put the most money into the hands of the few at the expense of all the rest of it. They say, oh, well, Rick, you're talking socialism. No, I'm talking actually having a reasonable distribution of the wealth that people create and giving them the power to say, you know what? Screw you. I'm not working for pennies. See, I don't see that as socialism. I see that as, well, smart. Or even if you will, libertarian. I mean, I don't want government involved. I want workers to be able to collectively bargain and say, well, you know what? We're not doing the work. And being able to hold that line. Problem is then the government steps in with the military as they've done in the past or with injunctions as they do. Because the wealth class has created this environment. Which is why I'm happy to see what happened on Tuesday. And we need to stay involved, stay active, stay engaged, and push and fight every single day to make sure that we turn this country in the right direction and we keep growing. I'm going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to talk with Pennsylvania State Senator Vincent Hughes about Sam Smith's comments yesterday that, oh, there's no way there was 90%. That's just there's something wrong there. Quick break, back after this.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham.
There was a very precise message from this election. With their votes, working people, working families made clear that they want solutions that respect hard work, that strengthen the middle class, that invest in America, and build upon working together, not driving people apart. I've never seen so much energy, so much enthusiasm, and so much determination. And despite the tidal wave of corporate cash, in most cases secret corporate cash, this election proved that there's no match for the strength of grassroots people power.
AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka. Trumka says a powerful grassroots movement of working people, a diverse 21st century America, rejected the Republican vision for America's future. Trumka says starting today at 100 events nationwide, AFL-CIO activists will begin letting the lame duck Congress know that working people will not pay the price for tax cuts for the rich.
Activists will send the message to our elected leaders that it's time to say no to benefit cuts for Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, and yes to fair taxes on the wealthiest 2%.
AFSCME President Lee Saunders says the election was about reclaiming American values.
The American people sent a clear message, sent a very clear message, that we will stand with a president who stands with all Americans. Working families re-elected President Barack Obama, giving him added strength in the fight to create jobs and create opportunities in this country. The voters have given a mandate to protect vital programs like Medicare and Social Security and Medicaid and strengthen the middle class. You know, this election was not just about who sits in the Oval Office. It was about who stands up, who stands tall for working people.
Michigan's controversial emergency financial manager law was struck down by voters on Tuesday. Jesse Russell reports.
The Emergency Financial Manager Law, introduced by Democratic Governor Jennifer Granholm in 2000, was originally intended to give the state of Michigan the power to appoint a financial manager in struggling school districts and communities to help get them back on track. When Republican Rick Snyder was elected governor in 2010, he enhanced the power to also allow the managers to strip union contracts, terminate elected officials, and overrule the power of school boards and city councils. On Tuesday, the voters rejected the broad new powers, leaving cities and schools wondering what that means for emergency managers currently in place. In one case, the state appointee of Detroit Public Schools, Roy Roberts, told the governor turning around the school system would be virtually impossible if control needed to be shared with the school board.
This newscast made possible in part through underwriting support from the OPEIU, the Office and Professional Employees International Union, and by IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Voter ID, which is going to allow Governor Romney to win the state of Pennsylvania, is done.
Yes, it's done. Done, he says.
I wonder if he's going to hear that again once or twice or maybe three times over the next couple of years. What do you think? But yesterday, you know, I got this really great tweet from Steve Miskin. You know, he said, look at all these reporters asking these really questions only they ask. You know, kind of playing down the fact that they were having a press conference where Speaker of the House Sam Smith, Republican Speaker, said, you know, I'm saying 90% of the precincts turning out 90% of the voters is questionable. He said, I know counties where people work their tails off trying to get people to get out to the vote, and they don't hit 90% in 90% of this precincts. Problem is I don't know where he pulled those numbers out. It's a lot of like the numbers I hear from my Republican friends who make stuff up. You know, they reach around back and they pull out a number. Kind of thinking that's where Speaker Smith was getting that number. But I've got State Senator Vincent Hughes on the line. Going to ask, hey, 90%, Senator Hughes, 90%?
Rick, how you doing, buddy?
I'm good. What do you take of that comment?
Oh, look, man, I don't know if you heard some of, I reacted kind of harshly when I heard that yesterday, and I don't necessarily apologize for my reaction, but I can tell you this, you know, that's some serious sour grapes right there. First of all, factually, it's just not the case. In fact, the turnout was a bit down in Philadelphia compared to 4 years ago. There's no number, no ward, no voting precincts where there was 90% turnout. There was high turnout. There was high turnout not because there was fraudulence or anything like that, because it was a high turnout because the people in Philadelphia had something to vote for.
Yep.
All right. And they doggone sure had something to vote against,
yeah.
All right?
Well, let me ask you. I wanted to get your thoughts on this.
Voter ID, which is going to allow Governor Romney to win the state of Pennsylvania. Done.
Done. It's done, Senator. Done.
Well, I never knew in my lifetime I'd probably say thank you to Mike Turzai. But this is probably the time. You know, what the Republicans did in Pennsylvania, but nationally, on their whole national effort on voter suppression, really backfired. And it backfired not just in the communities where it was intended to have an impact, the African-American, Latino, poor incomes, what have you, in poor-income communities, but it had a ripple effect for working people and just people who were about fairness, both Democrat and Republican, because it was clear that it was an attempt to try to deny folks the right to vote.
Yep.
And I know you've heard this, Rick. That transcended all different kinds of communities in terms of their backlash against that. So, you know, he unwittingly really stoked up the turnout for communities to vote against that particular thing, you know. So thank you, Mike Turz. I appreciate it. Got any others like that? I'd love to have them.
Yeah, I mean, we'd love to have that kind of audio where you then become the poster child against the issue, you know, much like Romney going on about the 47% that he could give a rat's behind about.
Well, you know what? Here's that situation, Rick. And you know, a reporter was asking me yesterday. I said, look, the Republican Party lost so badly nationally, but especially in Pennsylvania. You know, they lost every row office in Pennsylvania. They lost ground, significant ground in our place, in the Senate chamber. I mean, we picked up 3 Democratic Senate seats in that chamber. This is the first time since 1972 that there's been such great pickup. The Republicans lost everything because they're wrong on every issue.
Yep.
They're wrong on jobs. They're wrong on education. They're wrong on health care. They're wrong on the environment. They're wrong on compassion. I mean, the things that they were doing this last 2 years for the Corbett administration to hurt, you know, defenseless, poor folks, low-income individuals, children, the whole move on food stamps and that. They're wrong on democracy, the whole photo ID thing, just wrong across the board. And Pennsylvania citizens reacted negatively to that across the board. It was a clean sweep of all the statewide offices and a nice pickup in the Senate. A very nice pickup in the Senate.
Yeah, but here's my problem, and I'm looking at the fact that Obama took Pennsylvania by more than 5%, Casey carried it by more than 9%. As you pointed out, all the other statewide offices went to Democrats in big numbers. Yet in the congressional districts, because we've got this very nicely gerrymandered state, only able to carry 5 of the 18 seats.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's because of the gerrymandering, all right? And so because of the gerrymandered seat, because of the way that the maps were drawn, that is a factor that could not be controlled. If they were drawn more fairly, if they were drawn more equitably, then you would have seen some additional pickups there. You know, the Republican brand is going to have to change. And quite frankly, you know, Rick, we need them to change. With this hard right position that they've occupied in Pennsylvania and across the country, which was rejected soundly across the country, they've got to come off of that. And we need them to come off of that, because when they become more moderate, that's when we can get some stuff done.
Right.
In Harrisburg and Washington. If they continue to occupy the hard right, it's going to prevent us from moving the people in Pennsylvania forward. And in the long run, it's going to spell the end of the Republican Party, because they'll just continue to lose. The people are not where they are these days.
Yeah, you know, I go back to the clip that, or the quote by Dwight David Eisenhower, a good socialist Republican, if you will, where he wrote to his brother, should any political party attempt to abolish Social Security, unemployment insurance, eliminate labor laws or farm programs, you wouldn't hear of that party again in our political history, he wrote to his brother. He said, there is a tiny splinter group, of course, that believes you can do these things, among them a few Texas oil billionaires and an occasional politician, but their numbers are negligible and they're stupid. And the sad reality is, for the last couple of years, stupid seems to be running the Republican Party.
Well, you know, hopefully, you know, the more moderate portions of the Republican Party will get a hold of that and try to bring them closer to the center, closer. And, you know, forget this left-right center. It's where the people are.
Right.
You got to get to where the people are. I mean, you know, what our whole agenda going forward needs to be is we need to, you know, keep our defenses strong internationally. International relationships at a high pitch, negotiating, discussing, interacting with foreign countries and making sure that the American word is defined and really doing good negotiations internationally. But we really have to turn towards ourselves. We have to look home. We have to begin this process of rebuilding and revitalizing this country in every aspect so we can become number one again, number one in education, number one in infrastructure, number one in technology. We need to have big ideas and shoot and solve big problems. No small ball. No small ball. We got to go big, but we got to go big internally, Rick. That's what we got to go big at home.
I'm right there with you. But, you know, I saw Speaker Smith's comments and his questioning 90% turnout. And my first thought was, you know, why can't we have 90% turnout? Why would that be questionable? Why can't we get more people to vote? Why can't we open the franchise to everyone instead of, well, trying to restrict it?
Well, the president talked about that a little bit in his acceptance speech on Tuesday night, or rather Wednesday morning, that the fact that there this whole vote question about voting and the right to vote and long lines and all that kind of stuff, you know, he made a strong suggestion that we've got to address that, we've got to deal with that, and I'm with him on that. You know, what we've gone through this past year and a half or so in terms of voter suppression is unacceptable. We have to create a system where everybody has access to the ballot. There's no falsehoods in it. There's just truth and accuracy to it, but no shenanigans in terms of who can vote. If you're a legitimate American citizen, if you're of age, if you prove that it's one person, one vote, go ahead and cast your vote.
Absolutely. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Pennsylvania State Senator Vincent Hughes. You know, for me, the way we turn all of this around, the way we solve all of our problems, getting people back to work, saying trade policy would be a good start, but getting people back to work, and I look here on the state level, our governor had commissioned a transportation commission. They came out with a report. It's been more than a year sitting on mothballs. We've done nothing.
Well, Rick, you know, we have said that countless of times. We've provided him numerous number of concepts and proposals that other states are doing around the country. I mean, states around us are utilizing creative financing mechanisms to expand monies to put people back to work, to fix up our crumbling bridges and roads, to put investments in mass transit systems. It's happening all around. We can do certain wonderful things, rebuilding these crumbling neighborhoods and inner cities and small cities across the country. We've provided tons of proposals, yet he still sits on that. And I heard from some folks today that some of his people are talking about similar kind of proposals that he utilized in his first year and a half in Harrisburg, that's what he wants to pursue going into his last 2 years. And if he goes down that path, that's what it's going to be. It's going to be his last 2 years.
Well, I'm hoping it's going to be his last 2 years. I look at what he's done. The first thing he did when he came in office, kicked 41,000 low-wage workers off of adult basic. Then went after kids on Medicare and then eliminated the general assistance budget. All of this austerity, all of this pain and suffering, for what? So we can hand out big checks to these corporations? So we can hand out more money to the folks who don't really need it? It doesn't make sense to me, Senator.
Makes absolutely no sense. His job creation policy hasn't worked, and he really hasn't had any policy. It's basically a tax policy. And what he did is he lowered the tax rate for some of the largest corporations in the Commonwealth, not just small mom and pop shops, but for the largest corporations in the state. And they got, over a 2-year period, probably about a $900 million tax break. And the unemployment rate in Pennsylvania has gone up for the first time in 6 years. Hear me now, Rick. For the first time in 6 years, Pennsylvania's unemployment rate is above the national average, all right? We historically in Pennsylvania have been a point and a half below the national unemployment rate. So if the national unemployment rate was 10%, Pennsylvania's was 8.5%, use that as an example. Now, as the national rate is going down, Pennsylvania's unemployment rate is now above it. When this governor started, we were seventh in the nation just a year and a half ago. We were seventh in the nation in new job creation. Now we've dropped to 38, okay? And that's with his economic no-tax policy on the corporations. And usually you give these corporations a reduction in taxes with the commitment from them that they're supposed to put more people back to work. What have we gotten for that? They got $900 million tax break. We got a higher unemployment rate. It's unacceptable. It's bad economic policy for the state. And hopefully this will be his last 2 years.
Yeah, I'm with you. You know, I look at the bill pushed through by Kerry Benninghoff, House Bill 2626, where surprisingly that if you're going to go to work for a company and the taxes that you think you're paying to the state, they get to keep. That's brilliant. And the guy said that it was innovative and different, just like 16 other states who are screwing each other over.
Well, you know, Rick, this is what we got to have, a new agenda. And I hope that this governor and his senior policy people, both inside the government and outside the government, his friends, have sat down and talked to him and said, look, you got to do this thing differently. If you don't do it differently, with all due respect, this is the people of Pennsylvania are hurting. All right, he's not made a commitment yet whether he's going to fully put in effect all of the tenets of the president's health care program. We've got $17 billion. Sitting in Washington, D.C., that's due to come to Pennsylvania beginning in 2014, that would dramatically have an impact on putting 500,000 Pennsylvania citizens, providing them health insurance. He's not made that decision. In fact, he's fought the president's health care program all along the way. Hopefully, he'll have some good sense and make the decision to accept this money coming from Washington, expand the services that's provided, and provide health insurance to the people of Pennsylvania. But I suspect, I worry, that he'll go in a different direction. And I strongly, strongly suggest that he cannot do that, because the only people that will hurt are the people of Pennsylvania and one other group, and that's Governor Corbett himself.
Yeah, and
get reelected.
And the sad thing is it's going to hurt the people who have the least amount of voice and the least amount of power, which is why I keep telling folks we've got to stay active, engaged. The election may be over, but the fight just begins.
Absolutely. What we need, Rick, is the president's incredible ground game that he utilized to win this election. They need to take a couple of days off, rest and relax, get themselves together, you know, sober up after that long victory party. And they've got to turn it on for these policy agendas that we've got, especially with the fiscal cliff situation in front of us over the next 2 months, and really rev this thing up so we can fully, in full effect, jobs creation, the re-education, the re-innovation of the country. And that's what we need them to do. I'm encouraging them to do it, to work with them on it. Big supporter of the president. Want to try to keep this thing moving forward, man. And I know you're in the same position.
Yeah, I'm absolutely in the same position. But my problem is when you start talking about this created crisis, because this cliff, if you will, and you got to love the imagery that they've created this. Oh, my God, the sky's falling. It's Tax-mageddon. The cliff. Oh, the cliff. Something was very, very simply avoidable. They've created this, and it's not going to be the end of the world if it doesn't get fixed here in the next couple of months. And I'm telling people, step away from the ticking bomb mentality. We need to fix this right. We shouldn't be giving the baby away with the bathwater.
That's right.
We should be asking those who have the bigger shoulders to carry a little bit more of the water. It's that simple.
All we're asking, that has been the history of this nation. That's how this nation was set up. All right. And what has happened in the last, 20, 30 years, we've moved away from that. We've got to get back to the position where everybody helps to contribute, and those who have the most contribute the most. Goodness gracious, we're not taking anything away from them in a dramatic fashion. We're asking, I had lunch, today with, a gentleman who is in that 1% category. And he said, Senator, I'll gladly pay a little bit more, just as long as I know that the money's not going down a rat's hole.
Yeah.
That the money is going to solve a specific problem. It's no scare off my teeth. This is a quote from this guy. And, you know, he's not the first one that I've talked with who has had that same position. They'll gladly pay more if it goes towards specific things that's going to strengthen this country and make the nation greater. And that's what we got to do. That's how we got to structure this thing. And it'll work out. I know it will work out, Rick, and you know it'll work out too.
Absolutely. I mean, we've seen it before. We know it works. It's tried. It's true. It's tested. The reality is what it is. But cutting rates, cutting more taxes, giving more handouts, we've seen that movie as well, and it's failed.
Doesn't work.
Doesn't work at all.
As President Clinton said, that dog doesn't hunt. That dog won't hunt.
Last question I've got for you on the education front. We're seeing this push towards privatization, this push towards these for-profit charters and all of this profitizing my kids' future. I think it's a bad idea. It's a step in the wrong direction. How do we rein this in and make sure that the charter schools that are out there have proper oversight, they're playing by the same rules, apples to apples? How do we make sure we do that?
I think we're in a position right now, especially with the elections that just occurred, Rick, especially at the statewide. We have two people in Harrisburg and three people in Harrisburg now, three offices in Harrisburg now, that have the capacity to put a full check on and really put some significant blocks of accountability on how the front office is going to operate. A new auditor general, a treasurer, Rob McCord, a new auditor general, Eugene DePasquale, the treasurer, Rob McCord, and a new attorney general, Kathleen Cain, who have the capacity to fully audit, to fully account for, and to investigate any wrongdoing and how the money is spent, how public tax dollars are spent in some of these private educational operations. and we need them in this process. I think the whole move towards privatization is going to slow down dramatically in Pennsylvania. We've got additional help in the Senate. Again, I'm just so happy. We picked up Democratic Senate seats in Pennsylvania. We're now 27-23. We were 30-20. We're now 27-23. We're marching towards a majority, which hopefully we'll attain in 2 years. You know, this drive towards privatization of public education, I think, it's got a long way to go now as a result of this last election.
I hope you're right. Senator Hughes, I appreciate the time. It's always great having you on the program. Look forward to having you back.
Always good to be with you, Rick. You take care of yourself, man.
Thanks so much. Quick break. Back with your thoughts. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. I'm the talk.
In an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for the Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at thericksmithshow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Ganley Law is a proud sponsor of the Rick Smith Show. To better serve you, Ganley Law has offices throughout Pennsylvania. Call our main office in Waynesboro. If we think we can help you, we'll schedule a time and place that is convenient for you for a confidential initial consultation at no charge. At Ganley Law, you pay no retainer and no attorney fees unless we are successful in bringing your claim. Our experienced attorneys, Charles Ganley and Deborah Packer, will fight for your rights. If you face a work-related injury, an occupational disease such as hearing loss, work-related hepatitis or HIV, sexual harassment, or employment discrimination, call Ganley Law. That's toll-free statewide at 1-888-FIGHT-17. That's 1-888-334-4817. Ganley Law, fighting for workers' rights, fighting for your rights.
Also at GanleyLaw.com. Thanks to the industrializers of American agriculture, we finally know why the chicken crossed the road. To run away from the factory farm. These meat and egg factories are encased in thousands of sprawling, low-slung metal buildings that now litter much of our nation's rural landscapes. Rarely seen by consumers, much less entered by them, the prison-like factories are called confined animal feeding operations, and they are as far from pastoral as that name suggests. Typically, a factory operation has many thousands of chickens, cows, hogs, turkeys, or other animals jammed together in tiny cages and crates that permit little movement beyond eating and defecating. An Ohio egg factory, for example, was found to have 4 million birds living 6 to a cage. The cages were no bigger than an open newspaper, giving each one a space of roughly 8 inches by 8 inches for life. This isn't a farm, it's an animal concentration camp. And unbeknownst to the vast majority of consumers, 97% of the eggs we buy come from such factories. Even less known is the nasty fact that those cages are not only crammed with hens, but also with salmonella and other pathogens. Indeed, while corporate agribusiness rationalizes its assembly line treatment of animals on the grounds that it produces cheap eggs and meat, that low price is only achieved by passing on to the public the high health costs of food poisoning, antibiotic-resistant bacteria, cancers, and contaminated water created by the factory model. This is Jim Hightower saying, factory food production is so gross that, one, the President's Cancer Panel urges consumers to avoid it altogether by buying organic food, and, two, the industry itself is trying to make it a crime to take pictures or make videos of their confined feeding operations. Out of sight, out of mind, right?
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
We need to support people you know, who have a history of and know what it's like to sign the front of a paycheck, not the back of a paycheck.
If you're here to represent us, listen to our cry. Say, say the USA, we're drowning in green and light. Say the USA, as the tumor tries to fight. Stop taking all that money.
Back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. So, another cliff. I found another cliff. It's the suppression cliff. Yes! I mean, if we can have the fiscal cliff, why can't we have the suppression cliff? The Republicans want to suppress the vote, and here we go. We're going to the edge. The vote is going to be suppressed. And yes, Karl Rove, the $300 million man with American Crossroads, he said today, Obama only won. The president succeeded by suppressing the vote. Yeah, Obama was doing it. Yeah, see? It wasn't all those laws that Republicans across the state were passing to suppress the vote. No. Obama, the president, they did it. They suppressed the vote by saying to people, you may not like who I am, you know, you can't bring yourself to vote for me, but I'm going to paint the other guy as simply a rich guy who only cares about himself. Well, I mean, he was a rich guy who cared a lot about himself and about his class. That is true. But I don't know that he suppressed the vote. Actually, if you stop and you think about it, he did a very good job of getting African Americans out to vote. 4 years ago, the black population made up 11% of the electorate. This election, over 15%. This election with Latinos, Republicans lost that handily. Understand, 1 in 10 voters was Latino in this country. In 2008, 67% of the, he got 67% of the vote. 71% this time around. Women and younger voters, they stayed with the president. Why? Because they saw the same bad policies. This wasn't really about Romney. Romney's probably a decent guy. I never said anything bad about him as a human being, as a person, as a family man. I think he's a great family man. That he's probably a decent guy. Kind of guy you'd probably want to play golf with. Or have a beer with. Yes, but he doesn't drink, so you can't have a beer with him. My problem was the policies. The same stuff that got us into the mess that we're in. And it's the same message that the Republicans kept pushing. Well, you know, this election was really about those black people and those Hispanics. They just wanted handouts. Because O'Reilly's been on the racist kick for a while. He said, you know, the white establishment is now the minority, and that people feel they're entitled to things. Which candidate between the two is going to give them things? Limbaugh said, well, you know, it's just very difficult to beat Santa Claus. Hannity on the same vein, more and more Americans have become dependent on welfare. As they have, they found themselves siding with the party of government. Stuart Varney said the Obama's victory, the takers have taken over. And they keep pushing this frame out there, the welfare queen, that by making sure that kids don't go to bed hungry at night, somehow that's a bad thing. Somehow making sure that seniors have some health security and working people have some health security, that's a bad thing. Basically pushing that screw you, hooray for me mentality. Well, sorry, that ideology got shot down this time around. Let's take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show.
In an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for the Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at thericksmithshow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity
for our children.
Earth, sky.
Loggerhead turtles are sea turtles. They're found in oceans throughout the world.
Florida is the most popular nesting site in the world, and now researchers have found that tiny loggerhead hatchlings born on beaches in Florida can quickly navigate ocean currents. These little turtles are only a few centimeters long. You might think that ocean currents would sweep them along.
But in fact, the turtles navigate the currents using Earth's magnetic field to orient themselves. They need to avoid being carried north in the ocean into colder water, which could stunt their growth or even kill them. Researchers used computer modeling to show that even tiny turtles could influence where they end up with just a few hours of paddling every day.
The researchers used a computer model of ocean circulation to predict how the little turtles would fare if they swam a bit. They showed that baby turtles that paddle 1 to 3 hours daily get to warmer oceans faster.
Loggerhead turtles are considered an endangered species. These researchers said they hope that understanding their swimming habits as babies will help conservationists identify key areas around the globe for focused efforts to protect them. For more about the story, come to earthsky.org and search for baby turtles. I'm Jorge Salazar.
And I'm Deborah Bird. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
Just when you thought it was safe, those crazy Republicans are at it again. It's time for the Rick Smith Show's Conservative Alert.
Well, you know, you got John Boehner running around saying Obamacare's law of the land. Wow, what happened there? There was kind of a flip of a coin, don't you think? They vote to repeal it, what, 33, 35 times? Now it's law of the land. Now that what that means to me, it's time to poison pill it, which is why we need to keep active. Tuesday was a great day, got some movement forward, but today is the day the battles really begin. And as I've been saying, we need to keep people active, engaged, informed, and get feet in the street. And today here in Harrisburg, you saw workers from across the state come to Senator Casey's office and say, hey, this fiscal cliff thing, you better do the right thing. Protect working people in this state and across the country, which is why I've asked Michelle Boyle. She's an SEIU Healthcare Pennsylvania member, also an RN from the Pittsburgh area. She was in town today to put out the message. Hey, protect the working people. Michelle, thanks for taking time for me.
Hey, how are you doing? It's good to be here.
I am good. You know, one of the things I've been saying all along is when the election when it's done, that's not the end of it. That's just the beginning. Now the hard work starts holding these people accountable.
Absolutely.
So as you guys were here in Harrisburg at Casey's office, what was the message to him?
You know, the main message was is that we have, you know, we knocked on over 325,000 doors in Pennsylvania, and we got the vote out. We helped support him. He has stood up for us in the past. And we want him to continue to stand up for us even stronger this time around.
You know, I look at the health care law, and Boehner has now said it's law of the land. And I look at all of the things that it's going to do, the things that I was happy about, the end of rescission, the end of pre-existing conditions, the end of caps, expanding opportunity for folks who get into who need it. To me, it just seems sane and rational. It doesn't seem all that bright to me to be fighting against it, which is why I think they lost so bad on Tuesday.
You know, I agree with what you say, and I would actually take it a step further. I mean, you're saying it's plain and rational, and it's beyond that. I mean, it really helps define us as a country. Are we a country who turns our back on a child who has cancer and says, I'm sorry, we're not going to offer you health insurance? Or are we a country that values and invests in our children and in our future?
I guess the question then becomes, which part of the country are you talking about? Are you talking to the 1% or are you talking to everybody else who works for a living?
Well, I'm sorry. I wasn't clear with that.
I understand what you're saying. I mean, but, yeah. You know, in the world of high finance, the people who believe in pay or die, they would say, screw you. If you can't afford it, die.
Then I would say they're a cheap patriot.
And I would be right there beside you.
And I think the deep patriots, the strength of our, really the strength of our country all along is in the American families, and that the people who have achieve their congressional seat, that they really listen to the real deep patriots and the people who are there and have their back.
You know, I read your blog post. We've got a link to it at our site at thericksmithshow.com. Just click on Michelle Boyle's name. It'll take you over to the site where you can read We're All in This Together. And I was reading through this, and I got to be honest, my eyes welled up because, you know, that is really the story, as you told about your family and about, you know, your grandparents' furniture and how it became part of not just, you know, each generation, but part of the fabric of who you are. And it really struck a chord with me.
Thank you. It was, and I really, it took me a long time to realize, in regards to the culture, that it was something. My grandparents came over from Ireland in the 1920s, and they were, you know, they were obviously dirt poor, literally, and they worked their way up. They made, you know, and they had the same dreams for their daughter, and their daughter, my mother, had the same dreams for me, and that's sort of what that piece of furniture represented to me, is that, you know, that continuing on through the generations, and even though it broke, we plan on fixing it. So I don't think our country is unfixable.
Yeah, I mean, I like the analogy. I like the story. And the reality is I do believe, and I've said numerous times in this program, I believe we all want the same things, or the vast majority of us want the same thing. We want opportunity for our children. We want a better future for them, safe schools, safe neighborhoods, you know, all of that stuff, security and health, security and retirement. The question is just how you get there.
I think you get there by holding our representatives accountable, that once they get back to D.C. And back into the Beltway, that they don't forget how they got there. And to also offer them support, because it seems the amount of money that was poured against President Obama was astounding.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't think there was sometimes it felt like there wasn't a minute that went by that the Democratic Party wasn't asking me for money. But I think that this kind of shows how the vast resources that they have to work against people who, I really believe, go into office and really actually want to make a change, and then they get bogged down. So I think it's our job to continue to remind them and to root them in saying, hey, you know, let's remember the American family, even though they're being deluged with all the lobbyists who seem to overrun D.C.
Yeah. Well, now we've got this created crisis coming down the pike. They're pushing us towards the fiscal cliff. I'm sure you've heard about it. It's all the rage right now. They're trying to work up the, you know, all the bomb's ticking. We gotta take care of it. The car's going over the fiscal cliff. We gotta act now. I'm not so willing to jump on that bandwagon. I say we take a little time. We do it right. And make sure that the folks who have big shoulders, they carry a little bit more. But the folks who are struggling, we make sure we take care of them as well.
Absolutely. I mean, my father was laid off 8 times when I was growing up. So I get, and I know that I'm not the only one out there that has happened to, or is not currently happening to. So every day, American families are facing fiscal cliffs, and yet they continue on. They find a way to make it happen, and they don't kick their kids out of the house and not feed them or say, I'm sorry, grandma and grandpa, you have to find another place to go. They don't do that. They do what needs to be done to take care of the most important thing in this country, and the most important thing in this country is the American family.
Absolutely. You know, some of the cuts that you've seen that are supposedly part of this, you know, and look, when I spoke with Senator Casey the other day, he said, you know, they deliberately put some very objectionable cuts in there so that it would be so painful that they wouldn't let it go forward. And I say, well, you know, those are the first things we should be taking off the table, the things that are going to hurt the most vulnerable. And I look at some of the Medicare cuts, and I'm curious, as an RN, how would that affect your hospital and your patients?
It would be devastating. When you look at hospitals, even the largest ones in Pittsburgh, over half of our funding comes from Medicare and Medicaid. Over half. The insurance companies who, you know, like to blow a bluster a lot, they don't, in some cases, in some of even the larger hospitals, they're 60%. And in areas that you wouldn't normally think of it, these are hospitals in, semi-nice areas. So it would be a huge blow to be cutting to Medicare and Medicaid, and I don't think you should kick sick people while they're down when there's obviously enough money in this country. As Van Jones always so eloquently says, we're not broke, we're being robbed.
Yeah, that's absolutely the truth. But, you know, here's the thing. As long as we've got a healthcare system that's set up on someone profiting off of your or my misfortune, we're going to run into these problems.
I would have to wholeheartedly agree with that. When I'm on the floor, my patient is my most important thing, and I know every nurse puts their heart and soul into what they do because, obviously we're dealing with people at their most vulnerable. I don't know that it'll come across the radio, but I do know that anybody who's ever been in a hospital, they're very grateful, not just for the nurses, but the aides and anybody who comes in and touches their lives. Yep. They're feeling so vulnerable. And I think it's a cheap patriot who sticks people in down and like that.
I'm right there with you. I know when I spent a couple of times this summer in the hospital, and, you know, those people are truly angels sent from above to take care of you when you need the help. And I give you the ultimate credit for what you do. Last question I've got for you. You know, as this goes down the road, as we move towards the edge of the cliff and start looking over to the abyss that they've created, what do we have people do? What are you guys working on? How do we push and make sure that this isn't, we aren't fixing this off the backs of the most vulnerable?
I sort of have to laugh at this abysmal cliff that they keep on talking about because, again, American families are doing this every day, and when they're standing on the edge of the cliff, one of two things happen. The parachute opens or they fly. I think that how we do that is that we hold them accountable. We say that, you know, the answer is not to cut. The answer is to support American families, call your legislators, give them the heat, give them the pressure, give them the stories, give them the ammunition that they need to take to the floor to say this is what the people who have voted should be doing.
Yep.
You know, and that's what my union's doing. They held rallies across the country today to show what the popular vote, you know, what the
what we decided on Tuesday. I mean, you look at the polling.
Yeah.
The polling is very clear. People want taxes to be raised where they can be. 6 in 10 people said we need to raise the taxes. We need to do it. The clear picture came out of Tuesday. Michelle Boyle, I appreciate the time. Thank you for the work that you do. Keep up the fight, and we're going to win this.
Thank you very much. I greatly appreciate all the work that you do.
All right. Thanks so much. Michelle Boyle, SEIU Healthcare Pennsylvania member, also an RN from the Pittsburgh area, here in town to, you know, like I've been saying, in the street. This is where the fight is. This is when the real fight begins. Going to take a quick break. Back with hour two of the program. Stick around.
Smith Show, changing America for the better.
You are listening to The Rick Smith Show on WIOO 97.9 Carlisle and 93.9 Shippensburg. We're back live in the studio tonight and every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Got something on your mind? Give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham.
There was a very precise message from this election. With their votes, working people, working families made clear that they want solutions that respect hard work, that strengthen the middle class, that invest in America, and build upon working together, not driving people apart. I've never seen so much energy. so much enthusiasm, and so much determination. And despite the tidal wave of corporate cash, in most cases secret corporate cash, this election proved that there's no match for the strength of grassroots people power.
AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka. Trumka says a powerful grassroots movement of working people, a diverse 21st century America, rejected the Republican vision for America's future. Trumka says starting today at 100 events nationwide, AFL-CIO activists will begin letting the lame duck Congress know that working people will not pay the price for tax cuts for the rich.
Activists will send the message to our elected leaders that it's time to say no to benefit cuts for Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, and yes to fair taxes on the wealthiest 2%.
AFSCME President Lee Saunders says the election was about reclaiming American values.
The American people sent a clear message, sent a very clear message, that we will stand with a president who stands with all Americans. Working families re-elected President Barack Obama, giving him added strength in the fight to create jobs and create opportunities in this country. The voters have given a mandate to protect vital programs like Medicare and Social Security and Medicaid and strengthen the middle class. You know, this election was not just about who sits in the Oval Office. It was about who stands up, who stands tall for working people.
Michigan's controversial emergency financial manager law was struck down by voters on Tuesday. Jesse Russell reports.
The Emergency Financial Manager Law, introduced by Democratic Governor Jennifer Granholm in 2000, was originally intended to give the state of Michigan the power to appoint a financial manager in struggling school districts and communities to help get them back on track. When Republican Rick Snyder was elected governor in 2010, he enhanced the power to also allow the managers to strip union contracts, terminate elected officials, and overrule the power of school boards and city councils. On Tuesday, the voters rejected the broad new powers, leaving cities and schools wondering what that means for emergency managers currently in place. In one case, the state appointee of Detroit Public Schools, Roy Roberts, told the governor turning around the school system would be virtually impossible if control needed to be shared with the school board.
This newscast made possible in part through underwriting support from the OPEIU, the Office and Professional Employees International Union, and by IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
We need a third party to save this country. Not Ron Paul and the Ron Paulites, no. We need a legitimate third party to challenge the current system that we have, because I don't believe that the Republican Party, although I ran as a Republican, I have been voting Republican for decades, I don't believe the Republican Party has the ability to rebrand itself.
That has been the Republican Party, feed the rich and bury the poor, for a couple of generations now at least. But I'm kind of enjoying that whole, the Republican Party, they don't have a message, they don't know their brand, all over the map. I'm kind of enjoying it. Kind of think it's pretty interesting. Welcome back to the second hour of the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Going to talk about the big election and the cliff. You know, the fiscal cliff's coming. I've got Bob Wiener, national Democratic strategist and national columnist, former Clinton White House spokesman. Got him on the line. Bob, thanks for taking time for me.
It's great to be back with you, Rick, and boy, do you get the issues right.
The fiscal cliff. Oh, my God, the sky is falling. The end of the world. It's over.
Well, we have to use, you know, Bush said, I won my capital, and now I'm going to use it. I hope that Obama uses his capital, Rick, to make sure that the fiscal cliff doesn't destroy seniors through cuts in Medicare and Social Security, which if they do that, see, I'm concerned on that.
Me too.
If they do that, then they're really adding poverty to America. They're putting seniors who are now quite well off because of Social Security, and it stops 75% of seniors from going into poverty and garbage cans for their food. That's the reality of what it did. It puts them back there, and we'll have to pay that way. And Medicare stops 25% of the seniors from poverty through their health care costs. So what we don't pay on one end, we pay at the other. And meanwhile, we take away the life of dignity for our seniors. And it's an excuse, because Social Security seniors have paid into for the next – it's solvent for 30 years. Medicare now with Obamacare is solvent for the next 10 years, and it's because of premiums that people have paid into it that the Republicans are still trying. They forgot they lost the election, but they're going to try to take away the benefits from seniors.
Yeah, I mean, but at the end of this, and you said they're living pretty well. I think I would disagree a little bit with that. They haven't been harmed as much as everybody else has.
I agree.
But my grandmother's not living high off the hog. She's not living the gilded life, if you will. She's getting by, and she's not eating cat food. But, you know, she's not living the life that if you listen to many Republicans, you think, wow, they're wonderful. Wow, they're just living high off the hog. That's
no,
not
you're,
the case.
You're absolutely right. It's a subsistence living that Social Security gives you. It's a safety net. You're exactly right.
Which is
and
why
to take that away, Rick, is outrageous to not tax increases to the Clinton levels for the top 2%, which is what they're talking about. They're paying for it with poor seniors and students. And housing and health care. They're trying to do it every which way, but the two ways that really matter, which is the disproportionate tax breaks for the rich and the wars, the military-industrial complex that Eisenhower warned about in the 50s,
right,
is still with us when President Obama recently said we spend more in the military than the next 10 countries combined. And so to not pull that funding away and to use it for our infrastructure, which he's trying to do, he wants to take half the reduction of the wars and use that funding for infrastructure, the Republicans are going to try to stop it and call stimulus a dirty word. And it's outrageous that we can't even do nation building in our own country.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. But you know, if you listen to Romney and what I was saying during the election, if you listen to Romney, Romney was talking about huge stimulus spending. Every time he turned, although he didn't use the dreaded S word, as you pointed out, he talked about it in terms of we need to build boats for our military. We need to spend, what was it, $5 trillion? That's a huge stimulus.
Well, $2 trillion more for the military is what he said.
Okay.
$2 trillion more, $5 trillion in tax cuts when you add up his 20% across the board that he wants to let everybody pay. It becomes this huge five. That's what it adds up to. And then he, of course, never would say, and now Boehner's trying to say we're going to do it the Romney way as though they won the election.
Yeah.
He would never say where they're going to get the reforms from through the loopholes. Never would say it. And I want to see how we're going to reform and take away the health benefit. We're going to take away the housing benefit. We're going to take away your pension benefits. We're going to take away your education, your charities. Which thing that helps America are you going to take away and give away so you can pay for these tax breaks for the rich?
Yeah, I'm with you. But the reason I brought up the military spending, what I call a stimulus, is, you know, had we taken that kind of money, $2 trillion, as you pointed out, back in 2009, and really had a true stimulus, not the Recovery Act was helpful. I don't think it was near enough. I think we needed a much chunkier, much bigger shot in the arm, much bigger jolt, if you will.
You're absolutely right, and we would have had it without the Republican obstructionism, Rick. Remember the Jobs for All Act that the Republicans kept blocking? The jobs for first offenders and firefighters and police and all of that, as well as
you mean the heroes?
Yeah, and the Republicans kept blocking it. It was a million jobs and a point off our unemployment rate. So when they said that the unemployment rate's too high, it's because they wouldn't let the president's bill go through. I'm hoping when I said at the beginning of the show that he's got to use his capital, that's what I mean. That bill should go through.
The question is, and I think this that's the million-dollar question, will this guy do it, though? I mean, he has not shown me the most steely spine, if you will.
Well, he's gotten better and better. You know, at least, Rick, remember in the beginning, you know, we got memories here. He said he didn't want any of the Bush tax breaks, but he did it for the Republicans because he had to stop that then fiscal cliff. So he compromised and did he continued the Bush tax breaks and the rich ones. Now he's compromising. So his position was always to return to the Clinton rates overall. Now it's just for the for the 98% of all Americans, except for the top 2%. I hope the heck he at least sticks with that much.
Yeah,
that's
$1 trillion
of the $5 trillion that we'll get back from that we're losing. We're losing $4 trillion because of the Bush tax breaks. Revenue that we do not have for the United States of America.
Yeah, what bothers me is we keep talking about we need to go return to the Clinton tax code, which I'm not against. Why aren't we talking about going back to the good socialist president Dwight David Eisenhower's tax code? Why aren't we talking about that? Because the economy did fairly well and there's study after study that shows the higher tax rates with more incentives leads to a better economy.
Did you see the Library of Congress study that the Republicans refused to allow, but everybody, Rachel Maddow and everybody got it anyway, and
yeah.
I've got a copy of it.
Common
I immediately
sense.
Downloaded it that showed that cutting taxes does not create jobs. And in fact, what creates jobs is jobs programs. And the Republicans said, we don't want that study. It destroys what we're saying. Well, yeah, that's called facts.
Yeah, well, here again, I mean, you look at David Stockman, who said, you know, the Republicans have this tax cut fetish. And it hasn't helped us. It hasn't led to more growth. And what I see coming, and maybe you'll have a better view on this than I do, you know, I look at us having the same conversation to redo the tax reform bill of 1986, which, I got to be honest, was a failure. It didn't lead to more economic growth. It didn't lead
to
more jobs.
Of course not. You're talking about Reagan stuff.
Of course. Well,
and
but
no,
you know, that
led to a tripling of the deficit.
Right, but here's the thing.
Nobody wants to say that, Bob.
But here, they point to that, Bob, and they say, wow, you see, it was bipartisan. Democrats and Republicans coming together. Yeah, on a really bad idea.
Right, I agree. And by the way, you're one of the few people that I think would appreciate it. I read it cover to cover and circled, and I don't read many books. I'm glued to all the TV, the cables, and the newspapers and all of that. But I read Clinton's Back to Work. It is a phenomenal book. It's about 200 pages, and it's policy, 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 and it points out the 30 years that we've had of opposition to government intervention that has cost us and caused the income separation, caused the joblessness. It's caused the reduction in student, how we've gone to 17th in students and how we're 40th in health care and all of that kind of thing. If you read Clinton's book, Back to Work, it is a phenomenal policy analysis. That guy is so good. You were at the convention, right?
No, I didn't.
Oh,
we didn't make it.
Go.
No,
but Clinton's speech turned it around.
Yeah, we watched it here on TV.
Yeah.
Like other folks, like the poor folks that we are.
The Secretary of Explaining Things.
Yeah, I mean, we're not the investor class. We don't have that kind of revenue. But you know, the thing here is you know you go back and you look through history.
There were travel lodges there, Rick. If you booked early enough.
Yeah, they were charging $400 a night. If I was told right, that was a year in one night there. But you know, you look at this and you look at some of the policy that we should have been pursuing, and I go back to the beginning of Obama's term when they passed Lilly Ledbetter. I would have rather seen them pass the Employee Free Choice Act. So you say, women, hey, you're not going to get screwed from the beginning with your paycheck.
Well, there's that, but the fact, you know, just think of Romney to the end of time, and the gender gap survived. We had 11 or 12 points, I forget which. It was one of the, I got to look at the final numbers, but, you know, there was a huge gender gap, and it's because of all of his abortion crapola. But it was also because of his opposite. He refused to say that he was supported equal pay for women.
Yeah. How much, I mean, really, as someone who's on the inside in all of this, how much of that contraception, that the abortion stuff, do you think Romney was really into? Because I never thought that was his issue.
He was trapped. He tried at the end to say he supports the exceptions, but he still would have been for overturning Roe v. Wade, which is a disaster to do. And he still would have, he never came out, you know, against Murdoch. He actually did the ad for Murdoch, you know, Mr. Rape is from God.
Yeah.
I mean, fine that he came out against Aiken, who said legitimate rape doesn't cause kids.
The body shuts down.
Good God.
It secretes something good in there, and it doesn't happen. And the first thing I'm thinking of, if that's the truth, then there are a lot of pharmaceutical companies who are going to want that secretion. But, you know, that unfortunately...
It's unbelievable how you can have your head in the sand.
Or, you know, you're just not paying attention. You ran a really bad campaign. And I'm looking at how bad, with all of the money that they had, $1 billion they ran between the two campaigns on TV ads?
$6.5 billion?
We
fought fire with fire only because of Obama's Axelrod and all brilliance. But you know what? On women, unmarried women for Obama, exit poll 68-33. I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah.
It makes sense. It just was an outrageous set of policies that take away freedom and choice for women.
I guess he didn't open the binders.
Thing, the other thing, Rick, you know, you said you wanted sort of an analysis of the campaign. I loved what somebody said, that the Obama campaign used a very sophisticated, non-secret government document for its major strategy, the census.
Yeah.
Latinos, women, youth, African-Americans, this was the first election that did not have a majority of whites voting. It was a slight majority of everybody else. And the Republicans are so getting shafted by their own decision when they talk about, you know, self-deportation and not giving women choice. and then, you know, put everything else together that they did when Romney talked about real change. What? Tax breaks for the rich, drilling for oil, stop women's choice, oppose equal pay, self-deportation of immigrants, students borrow from your parents, stop getting health care so that you go bankrupt, and let's stop Wall Street reforms that will correct the crash in the first place. So, I mean, that's what he meant by real change, and people didn't buy it. This was an election where Romney would have been of the rich, by the rich, and for the rich. And I think that's how you sort of – you had a segment on that right before I came on, and that's what it did him in with the American people. And I found fascinating the current charts that are now out there, the lines of the polls. It was not Sandy that stopped Romney's momentum. It was Obama's two debates after the disastrous first one.
Yeah.
And you look at the, he restored his majority. He lost it after the first debate. It was horrible. I did an op-ed that was the lead in the Washington Times on the debate debacle and how Obama has to come back stronger with forceful sound bites. But he did. And he won the next two debates. So Sandy actually didn't do a thing if you look at the flatlining of the daily tracking polls.
Yeah, I mean, most people who were in on the inside knew Romney was going down. Just because of how bad a campaign with all of that resource and all the money.
Yep.
She ran a horrible campaign. And now you see something came out today that they're tracking, went down about 4 o'clock. They were going to come out with this ingenious Project Orca, I think they called it, this ingenious way of tracking voters. And it the whole thing crashed and a whole bunch of stuff around it where you go, if this is how you were going to run our government, thank goodness you lost.
Yeah. Yeah. Very ineffective. And then they showed on the other side the precision targeting of voters by the Obama team. The model for elections to come as to how they did it, and they targeted in the states that mattered. The advertising from the beginning to paint Romney into a corner on Bain Capital to point out that, you know, 25% of his companies went under. Is that what you want for America?
Yeah.
So to paint him into that corner. As a company flipper, not a job creator, and our advertising worked.
Yeah, I mean,
and
you look
of course
at...
Romney did it to himself with the 47% with the corporations
dumb.
Are people with I'll bet you $10,000 with my car garage. You know, I got a couple
subterranean.
Of you know, all of that
subterranean car garage. Do you think it was a slap in the face by Bain Capital to close Sensata Technologies on the day before the election?
I didn't even know about that. What's going on with that?
How can you not know about Sensata Technologies?
Go ahead, Rick.
When you've got, well, Bain Capital took over Sensata Technologies in Elmwood, Illinois.
Yeah.
170 workers lost their job the day before the election.
So they hit Illinois, which is Obama's state.
Well, they lost the jobs, moved, crated up the company, crated up the machines, shipping them over to China.
How stupid
they
is that,
brought,
huh?
They brought Chinese
well,
workers.
Well, I did hear about the moving jobs to China at the end. I did hear about that.
This has been going on
so
for months.
The name of the company was Sensata. Okay, fine.
It's been going on for months, the day before the election.
Yeah,
they
yeah.
finally lay all these people off. So
yeah,
all those...
No, that was news about Romney's old company moving jobs to China and the irony of that.
I mean, what, do you think it's a slap in the face? They did it the day before the election so that those 170 people go to the polls, cast their ballot for Obama, and then go file for unemployment.
Well, I think it was absolutely indicative of Romney's kind of policies.
Yeah.
That's what it more struck me as.
Well, last question I got for you. This fiscal cliff, the crisis, the ticking bomb, the end of civilization as we know it. Where do you see this going in the lame duck, or is this going to be something we pick up next year?
Well, I got to give a speech at the London School of Economics on Tuesday on the economic impact of the election. The fiscal cliff is not going to be one of them. That's one of the great illusions and myths, and that's going to be toys played by between the two parties until they both solve it, because neither wants to see the United States, because they'll both get blamed. It'll be like, you know, the Gingrich-Clinton thing on the shutdown of the government.
Right.
It isn't going to happen. That's what I'm going to say about that.
Okay, good. We will see what happens next year then. Bob, it's always great talking with you. I appreciate it. Would love to have you back come often and often.
Thank you. I will. Thanks for Insada, was it?
Sensata.
Sensata, okay.
Sensata.
Great, great. Talk to you.
There you go. Bob Wiener, National Democratic Strategist, National Columnist, former Clinton White House spokesperson. Quick break. Back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Who cares about the deficit? We want a glorious war. Or was it a shell game from the master of the cloak and dagger?
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. Stanley Law is a proud sponsor of The Rick Smith Show. Better serve you. Stanley Law has 9 offices throughout Pennsylvania. If we think we can help you, we'll schedule a time and place that is convenient for you for a confidential initial consultation at no charge. At Stanley Law, you pay no retainer and no attorney fees unless we are successful in bringing your claim. Our experienced attorneys, Charles Stanley and Deborah Packer, will fight for your rights. If you face a work-related injury, an occupational disease such as hearing loss, work-related hepatitis or HIV, sexual harassment, or employment discrimination, call Stanley Law. That's toll-free statewide at 1-888-FIGHT-17. That's 1-888-334-4817. Stanley Law, fighting for workers' rights, fighting for your rights.
Also at GanleyLaw.com.
Thanks to the industrializers of American agriculture, we finally know why the chicken crossed the road. To run away from the factory farm. These meat and egg factories are encased in thousands of sprawling, low-slung metal buildings that now litter much of our nation's rural landscapes. Rarely seen by consumers, much less entered by them, the prison-like factories are called confined animal feeding operations, and they are as far from pastoral as that name suggests. Typically, a factory operation has many thousands of chickens, cows, hogs, turkeys, or other animals jammed together in tiny cages and crates that permit little movement beyond eating and defecating. An Ohio egg factory, for example, was found to have 4 million birds living 6 to a cage. The cages were no bigger than an open newspaper, giving each one a space of roughly 8 inches by 8 inches for life. This isn't a farm. It's an animal concentration camp. And unbeknownst to the vast majority of consumers, 97% of the eggs we buy come from such factories. Even less known is the nasty fact that those cages are not only crammed with hens, but also with salmonella and other pathogens. Indeed, while corporate agribusiness rationalizes its assembly line treatment of animals on the grounds that it produces cheap eggs and meat, that low price is only achieved by passing on to the public the high health costs of food poisoning, antibiotic-resistant bacteria, cancers, and contaminated water created by the factory model. This is Jim Hightower saying, factory food production is so gross that, one, the President's Cancer Panel urges consumers to avoid it altogether by buying organic food, and, two, the industry itself is trying to make it a crime to take pictures or make videos of their confined feeding operations. Out of sight, out of mind, right?
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
Bringing sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
We don't think of the problem, we do it for the bridge. It's the deeper, go for the lot, but then we'll pay. Hooray!
Aye, matey, you're a pirate, or you...
I am the Tea Party people!
That woman just cracks me up. Oh, boy. Yes, I like, yes. Andy Borowitz report, Republicans consider welcoming people who believe in math and science? He says opting for a bold Big Tad strategy to rebuild the party. Reince Priebus, the chairman of the Republican National Committee, told reporters today, we need to welcome people who believe in different things than we do, like math and science. He said after disappointing results in Tuesday's election, Mr. Priebus said that it was time for the Republicans to become more tolerant of those with a math and science lifestyle. He said, just because we don't believe in those things doesn't mean we can't get along with those people. We want to send this message. Math and science Americans are Americans, too. The biggest departure from its previous electoral strategy, Mr. Priebus said the Republican Party is even considering trying to appeal to women. He said, I recently read that women are as much as 51% of the population. That number sounds crazy high to me, but maybe one of our new math Republicans can check it out for us. Andy Borowitz, Andy Borowitz Report. Yeah, maybe, hey, maybe they'll start looking. No, maybe not. You know, I look at what Ari Fleischer said after the election, and he's right. They're not going to appeal to the LGBT community. They're not going to appeal so much to women because that's not who they are. They're going to try and find the segment of the Hispanic population that's going to fit in line with them. And there will be some. I mean, just as you've got Herman Cain and a number of African Americans, Armstrong Williams, J. Kenneth Blackwell, a couple of folks you have on the fringe, the well taken care of. Today, during the House Speaker John Boehner confirmed today that the GOP will no longer attempt to repeal the Affordable Care Act. And what was that? I think 33, 34, 35 times they tried to repeal Obamacare. Cost what? Some $50 million? 80 hours of time on the floor? Yeah. We care so much about money, don't we? But he said, you know, hey, you know, it's the law of the land. Obamacare is law of the land. And then he went into this tirade about, you know, the independent payment advisory panel. He says that could be on the table because, you know, we've got to find the balanced budget. And, of course, you know that the independent payment advisory board is what they call death panels. Yeah, that's the death panels. We want the free market to decide what care you get, evidently, according to them. What I found interesting also is Eric Cantor. He told The Hill, while it's unrealistic for us to expect the president to embrace our vision of Medicare reform or Obamacare repeal, it is equally unrealistic for the president to continue to insist that Obamacare is off the table or that Medicare or Medicaid require nothing more than some additional provider cuts. And you go, okay, so you got Boehner going, well, it's the law of the land. We're going to start working together. You got the majority leader there. You got Cantor going, well, you know, hey, we're still going to go after it. It's unrealistic for us, for anyone to believe that we're going to buy into it. And you go, well, didn't it do anything? I mean, and I think Bob Wiener was right. I mean, at the end of the day, we need to use that mandate. And the hope is that Obama says, you know what? I've got the same mandate that the Shrub had, but not do something stupid. Like, oh, we're gonna privatize Social Security. And you look at Obamacare, and there are some ways that now that this election is over, there are ways that this is going to actually make people's lives better. And I have a friend who right now is sweating out making it to 2014 because he can't afford to buy private health insurance. He's self-employed, so he can't afford to go out and get it. He doesn't make enough money to go out and get it. There's nowhere for him to go. So setting up these statewide health exchanges seems like a good idea. He's a low-income guy, makes, you know, very little money, but he's making it. He's getting by. He's putting food on the table, just getting by. Why shouldn't he be able to have some health security? You know, and this whole, and part of the reason is you go back and you look at it, part of the reason he's got pre-existing conditions, both him and his wife, which makes the rates completely outrageous. And, yeah, oh, you go into the high-risk pool, that's if the state, if you can get on the list. So what this is going to do in 2014, it's going to end pre-existing condition. You're not going to be discriminated against. We're going to do away with those caps. We're going to do away with that. But also going to have the incentives for workers to get health care through their employer. So you keep hearing people saying, well, you know, they're going to destroy the employer-based health care, which I got to be honest, I'm in favor of. I am completely and totally in favor of taking health care off of the backs of employers, and I have no idea why they want to hold on to it. I never understood why Ford and GM and Chrysler and the big auto industry, which, you know, we were told for years, oh, $2,500 for every car is health care alone, why they wouldn't want to get that off their back doesn't make sense to me, other than it's that control thing. See, me, I want to see folks have portable benefits where you go work wherever you want to work and your health care is the same wherever you work, whatever you do. Would give people the option to work for somebody else. Or you know what? Like my buddy, put out his own shingle and try and make it on his own and not have to worry, hey, am I going to be able to feed my, going to be able to make sure if my kid breaks his leg, it doesn't bankrupt me. Or if, heaven forbid, like I had over the summer, a gallbladder problem, which is very minor in this day and age. Very quick, I was in and out of the hospital in less than 4 hours. Zip, 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 I was done, gone, down the road. Drove myself home, in fact. Don't tell them that. I wasn't supposed to. But if you don't have insurance in this day and age, and you have that surgery, you're done. Because, you know, when I saw the bills, you're talking $17,000, $20,000. If you don't have that health security in this country at this time, there is no middle class. There is no American dream, folks. So when I keep hearing the Republicans keep, even after the election, and so quickly, too. I mean, I thought it would take a couple of weeks, maybe a couple of weeks. All right, we'll start whispering about it again. But, you know, you got to give, I guess you got to give them credit on the other vein. They're willing to draw the line in the stand and say, yeah, man, we lost on this and we're going to stick it with it. We're just going to change a couple of words in the sentence, though. And my fear had always been with Obamacare. And same thing with Medicare and same thing with any social program. That you end up having a program that you have a party like the Republicans who are dead set against, have been against it from the beginning, will always be against it. And then they'll do what they did during the Bush years, poison pill it. And you look at the Medicare Advantage, where that $716 billion that the right kept screaming about, oh, he's stealing it. He was just undoing the damage that the Republicans had done in 2006. And when you realize that Medicare Advantage, which you got to love, again, good marketing name, covered about a quarter of the seniors but cost more than the traditional Medicare that covered three-quarters of the seniors, you kind of go, hold on, what are we overpaying for? The benefits were a touch better, a little, but you had to qualify for most of them. Just a touch better. But the cost, and why was the cost so high? Well, got to have profits, don't you? The profiteers need their money. And I think about, you know, this election. For me, what it said is, okay, that ideology that you've been pushing for 2 years, that two-year conservative commercial, which is what the debates were, the American people rejected. Done. Even some of my Republican friends who, you know, it's team sport for them. And I know a lot of the folks like that. Well, I'm Republican. Well, why? Liberty, freedom. Platitudes, I get. When you start talking about specifics, you start talking about Social Security, you start talking about Medicare, they're as liberal as anybody else. When you start talking about unemployment insurance to make sure that, you know what, there's a safety net if things go awry. That if you have a collapse like we had in 2008, that there's the ability for government to react. When you start talking to people in terms of, you know, a balanced budget amendment sounds nice, but it's a handcuff, and you're going to be unable to react to disasters, you're going to be unable to act a fiscal calamity, and that's what the right wants. That's what the wealth class wants, because understand, boom bust benefits them. Because it's the people at the margin who suffer in the boom bust cycle, isn't it? The people who think, well, you know what? Maybe I can buy that house, and I'm going to put everything that I've ever saved and everything I've ever worked for into trying to buy that house. And we're going to hold on for a couple of years. We're going to hold on for a couple of years, and we're going to go further and further into debt, and then they're going to take it away from us. And all of that savings, all of that work gone. And for them, it's just another investment. I think part of that resonated with people when Romney talked about his foreclosure plan, which is another reason I think he lost. The hey, screw you plan wasn't working for people. So the question is now, where do we go forward? What are the things we agree on? And for me, I think it's a strong social safety net so that we make sure that, you know what, when people do, when small business people like me and like a number of other people I know try and strike out on their own, that, you know what, they're not going to hit the pavement if it doesn't work out, that their family's still going to have some health security, that if everything goes awry, they're not going to be destitute. The problem is you've got too many people. And I know small business owners who've had to go through bankruptcy to save their home. The problem is you got people like Romney. And they use him as the poster child, but there's a whole class of folks who that's their gig. That's where they made their money. Abusing the bankruptcy code. We got a lot of conversations to have over the next couple of weeks and the next couple of months, and right here is we're going to be doing it as we go forward. And this cliff, it's nonsense. It's a made up imaginary crisis. We can solve this with sane, rational thought. Quick break, right back after this. Stick around.
A boy with a gun. I got a picture in my pocket of the lucky one. I'll announce the winner on the radio. With my microphone, I do a super show. I wear a cowboy hat. It is my business hat. I'm on till 1 a.m. I must tell you that. I'm a man with a mission.
The Rick Smith Show. Changing America for the better.
Would you dive 14 feet deep in the Susquehanna to keep a bridge safe? Would you spend night after night with prisoners to keep your community safe? Would you spend Christmas Eve plowing snow to keep roads safe? AFSCME members do. Men and women who choose to serve in public service. Mine inspectors, 911 dispatchers, healthcare workers, parole agents. You may not think about them, but no, they're all thinking about you. This message brought to you by AFSCME Council 13.
Earth, sky.
Loggerhead turtles are sea turtles. They're found in oceans throughout the world.
Florida is the most popular nesting site in the world, and now researchers have found that tiny loggerhead hatchlings born on beaches in Florida can quickly navigate ocean currents. These little turtles are only a few centimeters long. You might think that ocean currents would sweep them along.
But in fact, the turtles navigate the currents using Earth's magnetic field to orient themselves. They need to avoid being carried north in the ocean into colder water, which could stunt their growth or even kill them. Researchers used computer modeling to show that even tiny turtles can influence where they end up with just a few hours of paddling every day.
The researchers used a computer model of ocean circulation to predict how the little turtles would fare if they swam a bit. They showed that baby turtles that paddle 1 to 3 hours daily get to warmer oceans faster.
Loggerhead turtles are considered an endangered species. These researchers said they hope that understanding their swimming habits as babies will help conservationists identify key areas around the globe for focused efforts to protect them. For more about this story, come to earthsky.org and search for baby turtles. I'm Jorge Salazar.
And I'm Deborah Bird. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
We took a concerted effort to go out and find women who had backgrounds that could be qualified to become members of our cabinet. I went to a number of women's groups and said, can you help us find folks? And they brought us whole binders full of women.
Yes, binders, 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 binders. Evidently, the binders didn't open up this election season. They must have had those binders on the shelf somewhere. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. If you missed any portion of our program, you can download the podcast there at the website or get the Stitcher app and take the program on the go. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425, or email me, Rick, at thericksmithshow.com. So you look at these nonpartisan reports from the Congressional Research Service who have said, cutting taxes for the very wealthy, not helpful. It's done more to open up the gulf between those who have and those who don't, making income inequality in this country much worse, has not done anything for economic growth. We know this. We've seen it. But evidently, we need to learn it again. Because right now, you've got the Congressional Budget Office, who has now come out with one more piece of evidence. who's saying, look, you know, the fiscal cliff, you know, this thing. Sorry, if we allow those top tax rates to expire, would have very little, if any, effect. They said extending all expiring tax provisions other than the cut in the payroll tax and extending the ATM for inflation, except for allowing the expiration of the lower tax rates on incomes above $250,000 for couples and $200,000 for single payers, would boost real GDP by 1.25% by the end of 2013. That effect is nearly as large as the effect of making all of those changes in law and extending the lower tax rates on higher incomes as well. No change. The extension of the lower tax rates on higher incomes would have relatively small effect on the output per dollar of budgetary costs. So bringing that money in, giving us the ability to pay down some of our debt if we have to, or heaven forbid, actually invest in hiring cops and teachers and public sector workers, you know, the 700,000 that have been lost over the last couple of years because of austerity. You know, just a thought, you know, getting people back to work might bring more tax revenue into the government, may actually get the economy moving again, may actually create jobs, small businesses meeting demand, huh? There might be something there. What do you think? And you look at the last 30 years, and I go back to this Congressional Research Service report that has pointed out that, sorry, the tax cut ideology doesn't do it. And there are numerous studies that show that, you know, the years that had higher tax rates, the economy grew by larger proportions. And, you know, a lot of people are saying, well, we need to go back to the Clinton tax code. And, yeah, okay, that's a start. But what about the good socialist Dwight David Eisenhower? Why can't we go back to his 92% top marginal tax rate? Now, understand, nobody paid 92%. Nor would I expect anyone to ever pay 92%. I mean, it's never going to happen. What they did do, and this is what I've said all along, and you hear people talking about, oh, loopholes, we got to close the loopholes. Well, some of them, yeah, there's some loopholes that we probably don't need. But personally, I'm a huge fan of loopholes. I'm a huge fan of incentive. So you can call it loopholes, you can call it incentive, it's basically the same thing. It's me saying, okay, you want to take $10 million as the CEO? Well, you invest it in your company and business. You invest it in charity. You invest it in, you know, building a new wing onto the local library. You build a new economics building. You build whatever. But you use the money domestically. And we'll incentivize how, as a society, because this is what we've done. And you hear people say, oh, we're talking about distribution of wealth. Yeah, this is what we've done in the past. This is how we built the strongest, most prosperous middle class in the history of civilization. By incentivizing our wealthy to be philanthropists. And they slap their names on buildings. I don't have a problem with that. Slap your name on everything. But have it for the public good. You know, you look at this day's robber baron. You look at this day's wealth class. Not so much slapping their names on stuff as they're loading their pockets up, because they don't have to use the money. And they're using it somewhere else to make more money. So you can come back and say, well, you're just being a class warist. Yeah, it's a class war, and we're getting our butts kicked, man. Look at what Emmanuel Saez said. 93% of all new income gains since the end of the Great Recession has gone to that top 1%. So there's a distribution problem. How do we undo, how do we fix that distribution problem? I mean, that's the question. How do we have an economy that says, you know, the guy who fixes my dinner, or the guy who sweeps up the street, or the guy who fixes the bridge, or the person, or the woman who's the nurse who takes care of me when I'm sick, or takes care of my kids at school, how do we make sure that they're able to have a solid standard of living, contribute to society, pay taxes to make sure that we can afford roads and bridges and schools and healthcare and all of those things? How do we do that? And still have the well-heeled class, because, you know, we have to have our aristocracy. You've got to have the entitled class. And, you know, I'm sure at the Romney party in Boston, it was a who's who of the entitled class as 80 jets were flew into Logan Airport and were parked around. Don't know what to do with them all because they're all here for the big party. And you go back to fact. And this Congressional Research Service report is fact. It hasn't worked. This tax cut fetish, as David Stockman called it, has not worked. And I've yet to have someone say, Rick, you know, I got a tax cut, and my business hired people. I've yet to have that. What I've heard people say is, well, you know, there's been more demand, so I needed to hire more people to meet that demand. Tax cut doesn't usually do that. If we want to incentivize people to upgrade their equipment, I'm partially okay with that. Because that may create a couple of jobs over the long haul. It's probably going to cost a couple, but I'm okay with some of that incentives. But saying we're going to continue to lower and lower and lower the rate is nonsensical. Because we know those loopholes will come back, don't we? I mean, every time we've seen this. You know, you saw it back during the Kennedy years when they lowered it from Eisenhower's 92 down to 70. We saw it big time during the Reagan years. And we saw it again during the Shrub years, of course. And now we're talking about it again. And it's like they think we're stupid. Like somehow we have this amnesia that we don't remember how bad we've been getting screwed. And for me, I got to be honest. You need trade policies that are going to say, you know what? You're going to follow our rules. You're going to follow a high road standard. Or you're not going to sell your stuff in our country. I don't care what it is. I mean, you look at the story at Apple with Foxconn, the horrible working conditions. If we had a country with stones, we'd say, you know what? You're not selling that product here until you do it right. I now see some stories that possibly they're going to bring some of those jobs here to the U.S., potentially. But what kind of conditions? I mean, have things gotten bad enough that we'll put up with what they put up with there? I sure hope not. Let's take a quick break. Right back after this, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Ganley Law is a proud sponsor of The Rick Smith Show. To better serve you, Ganley Law has 9 offices throughout Pennsylvania. Call our main office in Waynesboro. If we think we can help you, we'll schedule a time and place that is convenient for you for a confidential initial consultation at no charge. At Ganley Law, you pay no retainer and no attorney fees unless we are successful in bringing your claim. Our experienced attorneys, Charles Ganley and Deborah Packer, will fight for your rights. If you face a work-related injury, an occupational disease such as hearing loss, work-related hepatitis, or HIV, sexual harassment, or employment discrimination, call Ganley Law. That's toll-free statewide at 1-888-FIGHT-17. That's 1-888-334-4817. Ganley Law, fighting for workers' rights, fighting for your rights.
Also at GanleyLaw.com.
AFSCME Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Are you feeling that back-to-school squeeze? Backpacks, clothes, shoes, all the things they have to have because last year's stuff is so last year? If you have a supply shortage, we can help. We know what it's like, and we've got the ultimate hall pass for you. Transfer your high interest and department store balances to PSECU. Our Visa balance transfer has a low 2.9 annual percentage rate, good through New Year's Eve of 2013. We don't charge you a transfer fee, and you can roll up to $20,000 in balances if you qualify. That's a lot of swag. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit pseCU.com/visa for complete program details.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
The man who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters. Rick Smith.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, therickssmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. So you may remember Mittens talking to the NFIB where he said...
I hope you make it very clear to your employees what you believe is in the best interest of your enterprise and therefore their job and their future in the upcoming elections.
So, evidently, the small business people across the National Independent Federation of Business... the NFIB, their little speech, evidently got out to some folks. A radio program out in Las Vegas, evidently a small business, a guy who owned a business that had 114 employees, called into a radio show and said, I just fired 22 of my workers as a direct result of Obama being reelected. He said, you know, I've done my share of educating my employees. I never tell them which way to vote. I believe in the free system we have. I believe in the right to choose who they want to be president. But I did explain that as a business owner, I have always put my employees first. I always made sure that when I went out without a paycheck and made sure that they were paid. And I explained that I always put them first. And unfortunately, I'm at a point where I'm being forced to have to worry about me and my family and my business. And he said, I explained to them a month ago that if Obama gets into office... that the regulation and Obamacare are going to hurt. And I'm going to make provisions. I'm going to make provisions. So he goes, he says, I have to be proactive. I had to get rid of 22 people today, make sure my business is going to thrive. He said, I have to build up a nest egg because taxes and regulations are coming my way. And you go, really? I haven't seen those yet. He goes on to say, elections do have consequences, but so do choices. And you 22 people... you're fired. And I gotta wonder how he chose to fire the 22. And, you know, this Armageddon scenario that the Republicans have really masterfully thrown out there, especially to small business owners. Because I talk to a lot of folks who I know who, like me, own small businesses. And they're saying, oh, they're gonna kill us. And I say, well, how many people, did you take home $200,000 last year? Well, no, I wish. Then you're not going to be touched. They're not talking about you. And the amazing thing is we've internalized this. If you own a small business, you've heard the punchline again and again and again and again that you bought it. It's nonsense. You know, the big CEOs, the CEO of Murray Energy, Robert Murray, he's going to pay probably a little bit more, a touch more. And that's probably a good thing. But today he came out with a prayer. Evidently the good... didn't realize that prayer should be private. I will recite his prayer. He writes, Dear Lord, the American people have made their choice. They have decided that America must change its course away from the principles of our founders and away from the idea that individual freedom and individual responsibility, away from capitalism, economic responsibility, and personal acceptance. You know, all things that Jesus talked extensively about, understand. You know, that whole capitalism thing, Jesus was right there. Right there. Robert Murray goes on to say, we're a country in favor of redistribution, national weakness, and reduced standard of living and lower levels of personal freedom. Again, the national weakness thing, not getting the lower standard of living, well, because we've got a redistribution problem. It's been redistributed from workers to folks like him. Anyway, he goes, my Lord is that our young people, including those in my own family, never will know what America was like or might have been. They will pay the price of their reduced standard of living and mostly especially reduced freedom. The takers have outvoted the producers. In response to this, I have turned to my Bible. And in 2 Peter chapter 1, verse 4 through 9, it says, to faith we are to add goodness, to goodness knowledge, knowledge self-control, to self-control, perseverance to perseverance, godliness to godliness, kindliness, and to brotherly kindness, love. Lord, please forgive me and anyone with me in Murray Energy Corporation for the decisions that we are now forced to make to preserve the very existence of any of the enterprises that you have helped us build. We ask for your guidance in this drastic time with the drastic decisions that will be made to have any hope of our survival as an American business enterprise. Amen. I listen to that. If that's what religion is, I am scared. Because I don't remember, and I have read the Bible. In fact, I've read it, and I've been beaten with it. Grew up in Catholic Church. Beaten, literally beaten with it. I don't remember any talk of capitalism. I don't remember any talk of enriching the wealthy. The whole prosperity gospel thing was lost on me. I do remember taking care of the poor. I do remember taking care of the elderly, visiting those in prison. I do remember the sick and the hungry. I remember a lot of that. Not so much about capitalism. Kind of missing that. And, you know, the whole redistribution thing, you know, the kind of part of me goes, well, I think Jesus would have been on board with that to make sure that we can feed and clothe and house. And I sort of remember, you know, a couple of very, you know, interesting passages, the Sermon on the Mount, for instance, or the part where, you know, he was asked, you know, how do we get into heaven? Well, do unto others as you would do to me. When I'm thirsty, bring me water. When I'm hungry, give me something to eat. I think Mr. Murray Energy has kind of missed that. And when he goes through his points, his outline for America's future, where he talks about basically the end of civilization, we're going to have reduced electric power consumption. No, we're not. I don't know where you're getting that nonsense from. Obama's going to enact regulation. Well, probably. And it's going to be the destruction of the coal industry by 2030. And I go, really? 2030? Where'd they pull that one out? Is it the same one? Did the same guy make that prediction who said the end of the world's in 2012? Because 2012 is almost over. You know what the destruction of the coal industry is, just to be honest? It's called natural gas. It has nothing to do with Obama. Quick break. Back with Hour 3. Stick around.
Rock and roll.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
You are listening to The Rick Smith Show on WIOO 97.9 Carlisle and 93.9 Shippensburg. We're back live in the studio tonight and every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Got something on your mind? Give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham.
There was a very precise message from this election. With their votes, working people, working families made clear that they want solutions that respect hard work, that strengthen the middle class, that invest in America, and build upon working together, not driving people apart. I've never seen so much energy. so much enthusiasm, and so much determination. And despite the tidal wave of corporate cash, in most cases secret corporate cash, this election proved that there's no match for the strength of grassroots people power.
AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka. Trumka says a powerful grassroots movement of working people, a diverse 21st century America, rejected the Republican vision for America's future. Trumka says starting today at 100 events nationwide, AFL-CIO activists will begin letting the lame duck Congress know that working people will not pay the price for tax cuts for the rich.
Activists will send the message to our elected leaders that it's time to say no to benefit cuts for Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, and yes to fair taxes on the wealthiest 2%.
AFSCME President Lee Saunders says the election was about reclaiming American values.
The American people sent a clear message, sent a very clear message, that we will stand with a president who stands with all Americans. Working families reelected President Barack Obama, giving him added strength in the fight to create jobs and create opportunities in this country. The voters have given a mandate to protect vital programs like Medicare and Social Security and Medicaid and strengthen the middle class. You know, this election was not just about who sits in the Oval Office. It was about who stands up, who stands tall for working people.
Michigan's controversial emergency financial manager law was struck down by voters on Tuesday. Jesse Russell reports.
The Emergency Financial Manager Law, introduced by Democratic Governor Jennifer Granholm in 2000, was originally intended to give the state of Michigan the power to appoint a financial manager in struggling school districts and communities to help get them back on track. When Republican Rick Snyder was elected governor in 2010, he enhanced the power to also allow the managers to strip union contracts, terminate elected officials, and overrule the power of school boards and city councils. On Tuesday, the voters rejected the broad new powers, leaving cities and schools wondering what that means for emergency managers currently in place. In one case, the state appointee of Detroit Public Schools, Roy Roberts, told the governor turning around the school system would be virtually impossible if control needed to be shared with the school board.
This newscast made possible in part through underwriting support from the OPEIU, the Office and Professional Employees International Union, and by IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny. We'll preserve for our children this, the last best hope of man on earth, or we'll sentence them to take the last step into 1,000 years of darkness.
You gotta love that. You gotta love the doom and gloom. It's the end of the world is coming. That was 1964. They've been talking that way for generations. And I look at what Boehner said today. He said, well, you know, I'll let all the political prognosticators figure out what the election, where it went and why it went and the way it did, because Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan did a very nice job carrying out our banner. He said, but we lost. The other side did a much more effective job in getting their votes out to the polls, he said. He said, I'm fond of saying polls don't decide elections, voters do, and more of their voters showed up than ours. And I keep questioning, well, if that's the case, and it is, how is it that they kept control of the House? But, you know, the thing is what I'm enjoying watching is how the right now seems to be inching towards the left, because they realize that where the nation is. The hooray for me and screw you ideology, not so popular since the Great Recession under Bush, and the widening gulf between the Koch brothers and the men and women who create that wealth, the people who work and make that money for the Koch brothers, people are getting sick of it. So I think, you know, there's a branding issue problem, but I don't know that they're going to be able to rebrand fast enough, which is why I've asked David Atkins, contributor over at Digby's Hullabaloo and chairman of the Ventura County Democratic Party. He's got a piece over at Hullabaloo, No Conservatives, A New Sales Pitch Won't Help You. We're determined to stop you. David, thanks for taking time for me.
Happy to be here.
So you look at the rebranding that's going on. I saw Hannity today say something about a path to citizenship as an idea, and I'm going, did I miss the grand conversion?
Yeah, well, they know they have to do something. I mean, so what happened to them in this election is that they thought that the percentage of the white vote was going to look like a 2004 model. So they thought that it was going to go back up, that 2008 was an aberration, and when 2012 was even less in favor of their model demographically than 2008 had been, they realize that they have a huge demographic problem, and that they have to reach out. The problem is that they really need to change their policies. The first thing they're going to do is try to throw some scraps, and they're going to try to put forward some younger, more minority, more female candidates out there. But it's really not going to help, because the reason they have a demographic problem is that they have a policy problem.
Right.
And just throwing out a few policy scraps isn't enough.
Yeah, I like what Ari Fleischer said. I think he's right. It's rare that I agree with him. He said the Republicans are going to have to wrestle with the Hispanic issue. He said you're not going to make them the party of pro-choice or pro-gay rights, and think you've made the Republican Party the party that's the popular party. He said we already have that. It's called the Democratic Party, which is why I consider myself a Democrat, because it is all-inclusive, and it is very tolerant. And I think that's one of the core tenets of what the Republicans are, is very intolerant.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what it is. It goes back to Buckley and standing athwart history and yelling stop, which I can't understand why anyone would want to do that, but that is their ethic. The problem is, you know, conservatives have been wrong about everything, going all the way back to, you know, segregation, going back to defiance of workers' rights and the establishment of the weekend and of unions. You know, you take every major battle in American history and even in world history, and it's always the people who are standing athwart history yelling stop who are wrong. And they're going to be wrong now. The people who opposed marriage equality are going to be the laughingstock of the next generation. The people who rejected climate science are going to be the laughingstock of the next generation. And the people who opposed immigration reform and the DREAM Act, equal pay for women, a decent standards of living, minimum wage, universal health care, they're all going to be the laughingstock a future generation. And it's just a question of how quickly they give up the ghost.
Right.
And they're not going to be able to give it up that quickly, because there's just a lot of people out there who have been worked into a froth by their base, by their Fox News media, and by the entire conservative media establishment, who are just not going to let them pivot that fast.
Yeah, well, and they may be the laughing stock of the future, but the reality is that they're a well-funded laughing stock. And you're right. The ideological base, the people who have been inundated and barraged with this so-called conservative message, that's all they understand, all they know right now.
Right, and it's not just their base at this point. I think that's one of the extraordinary things about this election. An article just came out today showing that Romney and Ryan fully expected to win all the way right up until the election results started coming in. And so did Karl Rove, and so did the entire GOP establishment. They couldn't believe it. And the reason that matters is, for a long time, there's been this separation between the hucksters on their conservative side and the base, you know, the rubes that were the victims of the hucksters. And there was always the understanding that the hucksters knew what reality was, knew what they were doing, and they were using their, you know, intolerant base as you know, easy marks and easy votes to pass along what the hucksters were doing. And what has happened is the hucksters themselves have started to believe in their own rhetoric. They're all completely captured by this bubble, this conservative information bubble that none of them have escaped. And that's a fascinating thing, because you see their vision of what reality is meet up with real reality.
Yeah.
And it's not pretty, and they're having to confront this very, very quickly, and not everyone is going to accept it, and there's going to be a big civil war in that party.
Well, I mean, I think you see it already. I think you see some of the fragments. You got Boehner, you know, kind of called, Paul Ryan a wonk. You got some of the, you know, the Tea Party's not really a caucus anymore. They're not an influential. I think you're starting to see some of that splitting right before our eyes, only 2 days after the election.
That's right. Absolutely. It's already happening. It's happening in a big way. You know, if you've seen The Music Man, Flim Flam, Harold Hill, that's what Karl Rove has done with these folks. It's what Richard Viguerie with his fake get-out-the-vote efforts are. The problem is that they've started to read their own press clippings, and now they don't know what to do. They really, really thought they were going to win this one. They've been blindsided, and it's going to get worse before it gets better. And the biggest reason for that is, you got to remember, these folks these working class white, mostly white men who are so hard into the conservative establishment now, as a majority of them, used to support FDR's policies. You know, they used to support the Tennessee Valley Authority and Medicare and Social Security, and we were on our way to universal health care system with the support of Southern white working class men. And all of that changed in the 1960s. And, you know, socialism or what they call socialist policies, I just call them, you know, normal good policies, social democratic
good government,
policies,
sure.
Everywhere else. They rejected them when they had to be shared with everyone, with women, with minorities.
Well, with blacks. I mean, you say what it was. I mean, it was a racist move.
Yeah, that's right. It's mostly race-based, but there's also, of course, a lot of misogyny there with women's empowerment. But yeah, it's mostly a race-based thing. And all of a sudden, that went out the window. And and those folks still have that resentment, and that resentment is not going to go away.
Go ahead. No, because what I've been saying is a lot of the folks that you've laid out, you know, the white working class, you know, the hardworking guy, not college educated, but you know, the guy who's out there busting his behind, you know, when you talk to them about Social Security and unemployment and a lot of the New Deal policies, they're still on board with that stuff. This election to them, and to go back to the race thing, it was all about the black guy in the White House, you know, just incensed that they've been pounded for the last 4 years that he's a socialist, yet they can't tell you one socialist thing that he's actually done other than Obamacare, which isn't even really socialist.
No. And you know, most of 70% of the country still favors taxing the rich. So you've got that 30% or 31-32% that has gone just way over the Ayn Rand cliff. They totally believe in the Atlas Shrugged ideology. But most of these folks, there's a huge number of reachable folks on the conservative side of the aisle who understand that, you know, universal health care is a good thing, that it's not okay for people to go bankrupt just because they get sick, who understand that the gap between the rich and the poor is immoral and unacceptable and at a huge distance, and they would want to see the rich taxed. They just don't like where the spending goes.
Right.
They don't want the spending
others.
To go on people who aren't like them, and they would rather suffer and be poor themselves than see certain other people do well. And
that is such a backwards idea, thought process. I mean, I understand. I know people who think this way, because I get the same thing about, you know, when you start talking about union workers. And I remember a guy called a couple years ago when Harley was on strike and said, you know, they make $18 an hour and they've got health care, and I only make $8 and I don't have any health care or benefits. And I go, well, are you mad that they get it or you don't? If you're mad that they get it, can't help you. But if you're mad that you don't, you can organize, join a union, collective bargain, fight for some of the profits that you create. That mentality's always been lost on me, that we want to take from somebody else who's just getting by like you are, maybe a little bit better off. That thought process has been lost on me.
No, that's right. I mean, and one of the big things that gets lost is most small business owners actually supported the president in this election. I myself am a small business owner. So I don't have any unemployment protections, and I don't have any guaranteed benefits. I don't even have a 401k. But I understand, as well as anyone else, that universal health care is an incredibly important thing, yep. And that guaranteed pensions are an incredibly important thing, and that we lost a lot when we moved regular private sector workers, so many of us, from pensions to and defined benefit plans to 401ks. And that we've basically thrown huge risk burden onto working class individuals. And a lot of folks just don't understand this. So what you'll see, and I understand as a small business owner, that if the middle class does well and if people have money to spend, they'll be able to purchase services and they'll be able to purchase goods,
yep.
And that helps everyone out. And
absolutely.
Then I would rather see, it is more beneficial to my bottom line, to say nothing of morality, where, you know, the moral thing to do is to make sure people are taken care of. My own bottom line does better if my taxes are raised, my corporate taxes are raised, so that everyone can have health care and everyone can have peace of mind and the confidence to buy products. This is something that a good business person understands. There's just so much resentment because it's hard to see, say, a labor union member having a guaranteed pension when, say, a business owner or someone who works in the private sector doesn't. But you get this strange mentality that says, well, everyone should be thrown into the maelstrom of uncertainty and the possibility of bankruptcy at any moment. And that's just, it's stupid. It's
yep.
stupid because it's entirely built on resentment and an ideology that has been pounded into people since the Reagan years. But you know what? It hasn't been pounded in to most young people. And that's what goes underreported, is not just the demographic minority and gender gap that the conservatives are facing and the Republicans are facing, but the youth gap.
Yeah.
It's huge, and it crosses all demographic divides as well.
So how do we turn this thing around? I mean, you know, and a lot of people put a lot of stock, and we hope that the younger generation, you know, they haven't, like you said, they haven't been beaten up with this yet, but have they been told the other side? I mean, one of the things that I tell my labor friends is, look, you've got to be talking to the younger generation. When I was a kid growing up in a housing project in the west side of Cleveland, I knew, because I saw people getting out of my neighborhood, getting those union jobs. So I knew that, hey, if I can get a union job, if I can get a job where there's a contract, there's a path to the middle class. There's a path to doing a little bit better. Are we getting that message to the younger generation that there's better opportunity than what they see right in front of them?
I think we are partly. I think the younger generation understands that things aren't fair. They understand and I'm 31 years old, so I'm sort of on the cusp of Gen X and Gen Y, and so I can talk to both generations sort of, but there's an understanding that the system is not fair. There's a vague understanding that our parents had it better, than we have it and had better prospects, and that there was more social mobility than there is now. The United States is now behind countries like France and England and Germany on the social mobility scale. What's not entirely, and so, you know, young people are progressive, but it's all, you know, snipping around the edges progressive, right? Passing the DREAM Act, making sure that we have equal pay for women, making sure that the DREAM Act is passed. And these are all, of course, fine and very important and very good things, especially equal pay for women. But the full-scale notion of the understanding that there can and should be a better society isn't fully explained, because there's not an understanding among the young generation of what has come before. When I tell young people that college education in the UC system, for instance, in California, used to be almost free, they just don't believe it. When I ask them what they thought the tax rate on the richest incomes was in the 1970s, and I tell them it was 50%, or in the 1950s that it was
92%.
Yep. Their eyes pop out of their heads. They don't understand it. They don't believe that such a society was possible anywhere, much less in America. So it's one thing to express that the system is unfair. Young people get that. Where we have to cross the bridge is to explain to young people, look, there is a better way. You can see it in some other countries. You can see it from our own history. This is what it looks like. This is what we can do, and we can do this again.
I'm right there with you. And that's a good start, and talking to people and reminding them of where we've been. David, I appreciate the time. It was great talking with you. The article over at Digby's Hugabaloo, we've got a link at thericksmithshow.com. Just click on David Atkins' name. It'll take you there. David, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Let's take a quick break. Back with your thoughts. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Is that old washer or dryer on the fritz and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's. 4-3-3-2-1-1.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Thanks to the industrializers of American agriculture, we finally know why the chicken crossed the road. To run away from the factory farm. These meat and egg factories are encased in thousands of sprawling, low-slung metal buildings that now litter much of our nation's rural landscapes. Rarely seen by consumers, much less entered by them, the prison-like factories are called confined animal feeding operations, and they are as far from pastoral as that name suggests. Typically, a factory operation has many thousands of chickens, cows, hogs, turkeys, or other animals jammed together in tiny cages and crates that permit little movement beyond eating and defecating. An Ohio egg factory, for example, was found to have 4 million birds living six to a cage. The cages were no bigger than an open newspaper, giving each one a space of roughly 8 inches by 8 inches for life. This isn't a farm, it's an animal concentration camp. And unbeknownst to the vast majority of consumers, 97% of the eggs we buy come from such factories. Even less known is the nasty fact that those cages are not only crammed with hens, but also with salmonella and other pathogens. Indeed, while corporate agribusiness rationalizes its assembly line treatment of animals on the grounds that it produces cheap eggs and meat, that low price is only achieved by passing on to the public the high health costs of food poisoning, antibiotic-resistant bacteria, cancers, and contaminated water created by the factory model. This is Jim Hightower saying, factory food production is so gross that, one, the President's Cancer Panel urges consumers to avoid it altogether by buying organic food, and two, the industry itself is trying to make it a crime to take pictures or make videos of their confined feeding operations. Out of sight, out of mind, right?
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
Hey, yeah, you're looking for experience. You're looking for someone with a proven track record. With the climate change about man-made global warming in this country. And everybody rushed to say, oh, we need to do something now about this huge problem. I didn't change. I stood tall and said,
this is the end.
This climate science and man-made global warming was not climate science, it was political science.
This is the end. My only friend, the end of our elaborate plans, the end.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. So, Fox 23 in Oklahoma, their traffic reporter, a guy named Jeff Brucleri, had an interesting segment. It's one of those that, you know, you go, yeah, every election you have these idiots who go, I'm leaving. If my guy loses, I'm leaving. Well, Jeff got on the air, and, well, here's the traffic segment.
And a little bit earlier, we had some folks make a special request. I know a lot of people said that if their candidate lost the election, they'd be moving to Canada. Not sure why, but that was some of the folks' promises out there. So let me give you the quickest and directest route to Canada from Tulsa. You'd leave out of Tulsa here. You take Highway 75 northbound, okay, 75 northbound up through Kansas, past Kansas City. When you get into Omaha, watch for that junction for Interstate 29, because then you want to take I-29 out of Omaha, Nebraska, right here. You want to take Interstate 29. That'll get you up through Sioux Falls, South Dakota, then up into North Dakota, and literally I-29 will go to the Canadian border. Now, they're laughing at me. Now, when you get to Canada, this is serious stuff. When you get to Canada, you're going to hit the border here. Make sure you've got your either your card or your passport, okay, to get into Canada now. Then you're going to get back on what is known as Highway 75 in Canada, or it's actually the Lord Selkin Highway. If you're moving to Canada, you're going to need to know this. Lord Selkin Highway, okay? So you take the Lord Selkin Highway up into Winnipeg. They do not have a hockey team. Yeah, they do. They've got the Jets again in Winnipeg, so you can go watch some hockey if the NHL ever decides to play again.
Yep.
So that's your route to Canada. All right, we'll have more for you coming up in just a bit.
There's your route to Canada. And, you know, I read the story about, you know, about this, and they evidently had a couple of immigration lawyers that they called up in Canada to get their response. And one of the guys that they called is David Cohen from Montreal. He told CNN that he had received calls from all over the U.S. After the election. He said, that's the amazing thing. When they speak on the phone, they're out of it. They feel very, very strong about it. They say, this government doesn't speak for me, is the language that we often hear. And you go, you're going to go to Canada where you're trying to get away from Obamacare, where they have national health care, dummies? It's almost like the girl who said she was going to Australia because they're Christian and they believe that the president knows what he stands by, what he says. The only problem is it's a woman. She's an atheist and living with a man in sin. So, good times. And for folks here locally, pretty simple to get to Canada. If you're still miffed, you want to go 81 straight up, 81 north all the way up to the border there. You pass over the Thousand Island National Bridge, take you right into Canada. If you want to go the other way, you can go take the tour through New Jersey, New York. There you take 81 to, you know, to 78 east up to 287. 287 will take you up to 87 north, run you right up through, you know, Albany, through Plattsburgh, up into the Canadian border. And, you know, I remember a friend of mine. I drove a truck for a living for a number of years. And a friend of mine, first road trip out on his own, going to New Haven, Connecticut. Anybody who knows the 287 split there in Jersey knows that it can be a little bit confusing because actually in that spot it goes all four directions. It goes east and west and north and south. Just different states, that little border thing, never mind. But he evidently thought, you know, hey, I'm going to go, he's supposed to take the Tappan Zee over to 95, and, well, kind of missed that. Took 87 north, headed up towards Albany. Ends up in Albany, calls and says, I think I'm lost. They tell him, no, you got to turn around, take that 87 south, get back to where you're supposed to go. He gets back on the highway, heads 87 north, ends up at the Canadian border. But, you know, and when I asked him, I said, well, why didn't you stop and ask for directions again? He said, I was making good time. And I go, you know, that really, when you stop and think about a lot of Republican mentality, a lot of the philosophy, you know, that seems to be, we're going in the wrong direction. We're going to follow Bush's policies. We're going to follow Romney. We're going to follow all this conservative ideology nonsense. And it's taking us in absolutely the wrong direction. Personally, I never understood that whole I'm leaving the country thing. Never, you know, even during the Bush years when I was not happy at all, especially in 2000. In 2000, to me, 2000 was much more egregious, much worse than 2004 because of the way it went down. That, to me, was a theft. And what's amazing about this country, and this is one of the things that bother me about people who say I'm leaving, what's amazing about this country is we can have ideological shifts. And I guess it goes back to the founding of our country, the 1800 election. When Jefferson beat Adams, and Adams relinquished control, I think the first time in the history of civilization where you have had a bloodless change of power, change of ideology. And it's something that's made this country great, that even if we don't agree, and this is where, you know, on a very serious note, you know, in 2000 when Bush was awarded the White House, I remember going, okay, well, you know, this is our guy, let's hope he doesn't screw up. Let's hope all the things that Al Gore said during the debates doesn't come to fruition. Let's hope that there are some smart people who are going to hold him in check. Turns out there weren't. And look at the mess that we ended up in. So I look at, you know, now you've got this election over. And all of those Republicans who were so adamant against Obama, now it's your turn to say, you know what? We need to get behind this guy and hope, and as Romney did to his credit, hope he succeeds. Because, and this is what just is mind-blowing, wishing that Obama fails, wishing that there's gridlock, wishing that there's delay and there's all of this nonsense, only is making the recovery take that much longer, only making the suffering that much worse. You know, I go back to that stimulus, to the Recovery Act, the stimulus bill, if you will. You know, had we had a much bigger, much heftier stimulus, and Joe Sestak lost the governor's race here in Pennsylvania in 2010 because he said, I thought we should have a $1 trillion stimulus bill. We should have invested more. We should have done much more. We should have had a bigger jolt to the economy. We should have had a bigger shock to the economic heart of this nation. He was basically crucified for it. And we ended up with a guy who says, you know what? We should have had a harder down. We shouldn't have done anything. We should have let it collapse. And that's where I think the ideology in this last election was completely pushed back against. Because I think people have realized, screw you, you're on your own, is not good governance. It's not. It's a recipe for disaster. But that's where the right wants to take us, which is why I'm glad Tuesday went the way it did. Now, hopefully, we push and we push and we push. We stay active, engaged. We stay on these representatives, on these senators, on the president to move forward, to protect Social Security, to protect Medicare, to protect the social safety net that saved this nation from depression. And you know what? Ask those who have done wildly well to do a little bit more. It's not that difficult. Let's take a quick break, right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
I'll never bend. I'm with you now. Until the end.
Thought-provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for the Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at thericksmithshow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Earth, sky.
Loggerhead turtles are sea turtles. They're found in oceans throughout the world.
Florida is the most popular nesting site in the world, and now researchers have found that tiny loggerhead hatchlings born on beaches in Florida can quickly navigate ocean currents. These little turtles are only a few centimeters long. You might think that ocean currents would sweep them along.
But in fact, the turtles navigate the currents using Earth's magnetic field to orient themselves. They need to avoid being carried north in the ocean into colder water, which could stunt their growth or even kill them. Researchers used computer modeling to show that even tiny turtles could influence where they end up with just a few hours of paddling every day.
The researchers used a computer model of ocean circulation to predict how the little turtles would fare if they swam a bit. They showed that baby turtles that paddle 1 to 3 hours daily get to warmer oceans faster.
Loggerhead turtles are considered an endangered species. These researchers said they hope that understanding their swimming habits as babies will help conservationists identify key areas around the globe for focused efforts to protect them. For more about this story, come to earthsky.org and search for baby turtles. I'm Jorge Salazar.
And I'm Deborah Bird. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
Who cares about Mitt Romney's tax returns? Secondly, I love the fact that the guy is rich. You got people who are trying to make it seem like being rich is bad.
Just the rainbow in the dark. Just the rainbow in the dark.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. So our quote, I still love John Boehner. You know, we lost, he said. The other side did a much more effective job in getting their votes, getting out to the polls, he said. And he says, as I'm fond of saying, polls don't decide elections, voters do. And more of their voters showed up than ours. And that is true. So the question is how did the Republicans hang on to the House? And I look at here in Pennsylvania, where Obama carried the state by over 5%, Casey by more than 9%, and yet only 5 Democrats of the 18 congressional seats, only 5. You look at Ohio, where Obama carried the state by 2, Sherrod Brown by more than 5, and yet only 4 of the 16 congressional districts went to Democrats. And same thing in Virginia. Kane beat Makaka by 5. Obama took Virginia by 3, and yet 3 of their 11. Could it be that magic pencil? Could it be the gerrymandering? I seem to believe so. Let's find out what's going on now. I've got Ellen Ratner on the phone, Talk Radio News Service. Ellen, thanks for taking time for us.
A lot of gerrymandering.
Yeah, I mean, the state of Pennsylvania, I mean, you look at the couple of areas where Democrats won and you go, my four-year-old does a much better job of drawing inside the lines than they did.
Yeah, exactly.
And for me, at some point, that's got to be addressed. I mean, you want to talk about fraud. Right there, in my opinion, that's the biggest fraud of all. What our state legislature tried to do with this gerrymandering, and half of it got thrown out by our Supreme Court. If you looked at the state, the way they drew up the state, Rorschach, the test, the guy who made up the test, he's going, I have no idea.
Interesting. Very interesting. I mean, and it is interesting to hear your perspective, because I hadn't heard this perspective that you had on Pennsylvania, but it is the same way in other states, including, as I would like to say it, the great state of Ohio.
Yeah, I mean, the way I think Iowa does it is probably the right way. It gets it out of the hands of elected officials. They should not be anywhere near deciding their fate by drawing the maps. They shouldn't be it at all. I mean, when you actually see districts where they, I was talking to Bob Ney the other day. He said the one election, they actually redistricted his house out of his district.
I know. I mean, he said he'd have to move just a few blocks.
Yeah. I mean, it's just plain nuts. So let me ask you, the big election on Tuesday, a big win. We now see Florida went to Obama, so an even bigger victory. Where do we, and I know you know the big cliff is coming, the big fiscal cliff, the end of civilization if something isn't done. Here in the studio, we had a cliff today. My producer Brett had a soda cliff.
Oh, really?
He was to the end of it. It was all over. Then he went to the store and found out there's an abundance of soda there. And I look at all this buildup.
It is Peter Welch. Who you might want to have on from Vermont, the sole representative from Vermont, says that we ought to go over the fiscal cliff because that's the only way that it's going to be regyroed so that the top, 1% doesn't get all the money.
Yeah, I mean, and you've seen studies already that come out, if we let the Bush handouts go away for the very top, it's not going to do anything because you're not really pulling any money out of the economy because they're not spending it anyway. And for me, I go back to, why not undo all of the Bush tax cuts? Go back to the Clinton years, because I seem to remember those being pretty damn good years.
Well, they certainly were for most people. But they don't want to admit that.
But, I got to be honest. The political class in this country does a marvelous job of imagery. The fiscal cliff, the tax-mageddon. I mean, the crisis of the debt ceiling, it's crushing so much wonderful imagery and last minute, ticking bomb kind of stuff. They should really be TV producers. Make, more TV shows like that 24, because everyone loves that. But that's no way to govern a country, though.
Definitely not. And it'll be interesting to see what happens, one, with Speaker Boehner's press conference tomorrow, two, what happens when lame duck Congress gets back and whether they actually do anything.
Now, you've been following this for a number of years. Do you think they're going to actually do anything? Or do you think the Tea Party, who, basically got their, a spanking, if you will, in this last election, they're going to hold things hostage until the end?
Well, it's hard to know because, I think they could hold out, although Speaker Boehner today on ABC News was a little more conciliatory. Now, it's interesting, he becomes conciliatory, and then what happens in the Senate is something very different.
Right.
Well, I mean, I look at this, and you know, I've been watching some of the, you know, Hannity said we've got to come to maybe a pathway on immigration. You've got Boehner saying, you know, Obamacare is the law of the land, and I'm going, wait a second, is the radical right moving semi to the left because they've realized that this election showed them that, well, they're the outliers?
Well, it's hard to know what what they're going to come up with. Although I have had people in the Republican Party say to me, well, we really need to make sure that we include women, Latinos, and gays.
Yeah, I think I agree with Fleischer, though, when he said, you know, women and gays, no, not so much. The Hispanics, yeah, we got to reach out to them. But those women, no, we don't need those.
Did Ari really say that?
Well, he said that they're not going to change their positions on contraception, and they're not going to change their position, you know, on gay rights and things like that. But they do have to figure out, they have to find a position on immigration. And I understand that. You know, I understand that, you know, they're the homophobe party, and they're the misogynist party, and that's okay. If that's where your views take you, then you've got a place. You've got a home. And hopefully their numbers are dwindling.
Wow. I think they are, you know, the demographic shift from 89% of voters were white in 72 or something, and now it's down to 72% or 80, whatever it was, like 20 years ago. It's changed that dramatically.
Yeah, and the reason is because of abortion, of course. If you listen to the right-wingers, it's because of abortion. In fact, Tom DeLay, I have a quote of him somewhere saying that, you know, if abortion were illegal, we wouldn't need those 40 million people from Mexico. We would have cheap labor right here with white people picking cotton and picking the crops.
Is this the same Tom DeLay that's probably going to go to jail?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll see how his views do there. The ABC interview with Diane Sawyer, Boehner called Paul Ryan a wonk. True.
Yes, he certainly did.
Wow. Where was that during the campaign?
And then he sort of tried to you know, recover and say, well, you know, he does our policy, da-da-da-da-da. But basically, he let the word out there, wonk.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's probably true. But, you know, again, kind of going along with this, we need to increase revenue, but not taxes. So what does that mean?
Well, what it means is that, as he's saying, he wants to close some of the loopholes.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's also a tax increase, let's face it. I mean, if the loophole is that you get money for offshore, you know, taking your business offshore, and you close that loophole, well, yes, that's also increasing the tax. So he doesn't want to call it that, but that's what he's going to have to wind up doing.
But at the end of the day, isn't his position the same exact position Romney had and what the Republicans had up until this election when they basically got their hats handed to him? I mean,
up until Tuesday, at 100%. But the question is, did Tuesday put some sobriety into him?
Because I keep saying, look, you know, go back and examine the tax reform bill of 86, because that's exactly what they're talking about doing again. And we've seen this movie a couple of times, and it ended up poorly.
Yes, it had, and it will again, unless they get a little religion and realize that the election was about a repudiation of many of their views.
Interesting, religion. You're talking about believers to have to look at facts. Wow, that's interesting. You went right to the religion thing. Nice. So some races have yet to be called. What is it?
Yes, there are definitely quite a few races that need to be called. Now, some have been called, but we haven't really heard, you know, concession speeches, or we have not heard yet that the state has officially called them.
The big one being Tea Party Alan West.
Some of the news organizations have called them, but not officials. And an example, I mean, well, there's one race between two Republicans that's not going to happen. It's a congressional race, not going to be figured out until the first week in December when there's a runoff. But Mary Bono clearly lost her race, although I don't know that it's officially been called, to Paul Ruiz. He's a Democrat. Brian Bilbrey, well-known Republican, lost to Scott Peters, probably by about 400 votes. Dan Lundgren will not concede. There's about 200 votes between him and Ami Berra, and of course Alan West and Patrick Murphy. Alan West has not also conceded that in any way, shape, or form.
And he's asking to have the voting machines impounded.
Right. I'm a Republican complaining about voting machines.
You know, when you mentioned the two Republicans who were running off against each other, I got a good idea. How about a duel?
That would be good. Jim Pinkerton, and my friend, wrote an article about 10 years ago saying, bring dueling back.
There you go. I'm right there. Or at least, as you know, like my grandfather always said, sometimes you just need to smack somebody. Maybe just a couple of good beatings. That's not a bad idea. But you know, you look at this, what happened on Tuesday, and you know, across Pennsylvania, especially in Philadelphia, a lot of long lines, a lot of problems. And I see the Brennan Center has weighed in on how we fix some of these problems. What are their suggestions?
Well, yeah, the Brennan Center is actually was named after Justice Brennan, who, as you know, was quite liberal in many respects, a very sane person. And basically, what they're saying is that they need to create a national clearinghouse of voting machine problems. There is supposed to be a commission, but of course it has gotten filibustered in terms of this commission, this election commission, on exactly these nominees, every nominee that's suggested that gets voted down in the Senate. And what they want to do is create a national clearinghouse of voting machine problems, and working on voter registration that would also clean up online systems through this organization. But I don't think the Republicans are going to hear of it.
Yeah, I mean, to me, the best way to deal with our voting machine problems...
Don't have voting machines.
Yeah, I got hammers. We can fix them. And go back to a piece of paper with a pen.
Right.
We used to do that, and they used to work. I mean, you had some problems with
people. Well, I pretty much voted that way when I voted this time. I filled in a piece of paper, and then I put it into a scanning machine. But then the piece of paper stayed in there so that they have a paper record.
See, I don't understand why either side would be objectionable to that. I mean, you go, if you're hell-bent on the machine, you go, you do your vote, and at the end of it, it prints out a paper copy. You look at the paper copy. You go, okay, that's where I went. And then you put it into a big bin. And it has no identifiers on there, but you say, this is what I did.
Right.
It seems logical. I go to the ATM. It gives me a receipt. I go, yeah, that's what I did. I have a record. It's pretty simple.
Logic is not always something that Republicans are going to go with right now.
I don't know. So I see the president's going to Asia right before Thanksgiving. What's going on there?
The president is going to go to Asia. He's going to go. There's an economic conference. He's going to be going to Myanmar, which is Burma, just sort of became democratic and somewhat democratic.
Somewhat.
One never knows with these countries.
Right.
But and then he is going to Thailand. And he's going to Cambodia.
Nice. All right. Well, get a little traveling in before the inauguration. And
yes. Well, and also there was this Asian conference that all presidents generally go to.
Right. And finally, he's going to have to come back and do some filling of cabinet posts. Holder said today he might resign. And
Holder may go. Hillary Clinton has said that she doesn't think she's around for the second 4 years, but one doesn't know. They're looking at Susan Rice. Panetta may go. I mean, just again, Panetta's, I believe, in his early 70s. A lot of these people are sort of saying, hey, I did my duty, and now it's time to have a life.
Yeah, I had someone tell me for the Department of Defense, because that Chuck Hagel would be a good person to put in there. I'm going, well, I guess if you were trying to do that whole bipartisan reach across the aisle thing, maybe, who knows?
Wow, I haven't heard his name in a long time.
Yeah, I didn't even know. Well, I heard Terry McAuliffe talking about running for governor.
Oh, gosh, he just sent an email. I'm about to say to Terry, who I know very well, are you really willing to give the death penalty to people as governor?
There you go. Yeah, excellent point. Ellen, always great talking with you. I appreciate the time.
You got it. Thank you.
Our good friend Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Quick break, right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Bargain. Divided we beg. Rick Smith.
AFSCME, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Ganley Law is a proud sponsor of the Rick Smith Show. To better serve you, Ganley Law has 9 offices throughout Pennsylvania. Call our main office in Waynesboro. If we think we can help you, we'll schedule a time and place that is convenient for you for a confidential initial consultation at no charge. At Ganley Law, you pay no retainer and no attorney fees unless we are successful in bringing your claim. Our experienced attorneys, Charles Ganley and Deborah Packer, will fight for your rights. If you face a work-related injury, an occupational disease such as hearing loss, work-related hepatitis, or HIV, sexual harassment, or employment discrimination, call Ganley Law. That's toll-free statewide at 1-888-FIGHT-17. That's 1-888-334-4817. Ganley Law, fighting for workers' rights, fighting for your rights.
Also at GanleyLaw.com.
Are you feeling that back-to-school squeeze? Backpacks, clothes, shoes, all the things they have to have because last year's stuff is so last year? If you have a supply shortage, we can help. We know what it's like, and we've got the ultimate hall pass for you. Transfer your high interest and department store balances to PSECU. Our Visa balance transfer has a low 2.9 annual percentage rate, good through New Year's Eve of 2013. We don't charge you a transfer fee, and you can roll up to $20,000 in balances if you qualify. That's a lot of swag. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit pseCU.com/visa for complete program details.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
If you look at when it came to the Wall Street bailouts, did the President of the United States listen to you when it came to bailing out the big banks?
Every sperm is sacred.
Every sperm is good.
Every sperm is given.
And your name are good.
Yeah! Come on, sing along! Wow. Well, yeah, good one there. That leads right into this next little bit. Pat Robertson. How many people know Pat Robertson? 82-year-old creepy old dude. And it was really creepy to watch. I mean, it was one of those moments where you go, wow. There's something to be said about having money and power that a woman would put up with this nonsense. So Thursday, the camera focuses in on Pat. And Pat says, "Christy, the last time I heard, you were a woman." And I'm going, where the hell is this going? Did she have a sex change and I missed it? He says, you're a mother. You're a sweet Christian girl. Lady, do you see anything in porn that attracts you? And she's like, well, no, these questions you ask me. I'm like, really? He goes, I'm just trying to get your attitude. She says, no, that's not really an issue. Thank you very much. He goes, well, it's boring. And I'm going, well, what's boring? Boring that she doesn't find porn interesting or porn itself. He says, well, you know, for some people, you know, it's an addiction. And he goes into this whole long tirade and it's just, wow. And you can see that he's almost trying to read something. It's either he's trying to read it poorly or the mind has just stopped, and even he realizes, man, I have stepped in it big. So then, not to give up on it, he said, the thing that shocks me, we always thought this was a male thing, a boy thing, a guy thing. and he goes into talking about mommy porn and 50 Shades of Grey and how, you know, the book was written by a little housewifey type. And you go, you're digging. You should probably stop. And he goes, you know, it's an addiction. It's worse than cocaine and heroin. And I'm thinking, well, exactly how do you know that? He says, you know, you've got to make a covenant with your eyes. You're not going to watch this stuff. And I go, you know what would be a good covenant? Me not having to watch Pat Robertson anymore. That would be a good covenant. Stop that. So Pat has to go into a prayer. He says, to make you free of porn. He goes, Lord, in Jesus' name, I come to you and I confess that my desires have been stimulated by pornography. You know what I'm made of. You made me a sexual being. But Lord, I've been over the edge and I need help. And I'm going, wait a second. This is an image. I really don't think that this, you know, this woman next to him, who's been forced to sit next to him during this bizarre moment, really wants to hear. I don't really care about an 82-year-old's sexual habits. I don't. What I find interesting, though, is that he is surprised that it's not a boy thing or a guy thing, that women may actually be sexual beings as well. And you wonder why the Republican Party got thumped on Tuesday, why the female vote in this country went so far against them. That segment right there. The other part, in Ohio, one of the prosecutors in Ohio decided that they weren't going to they were going to plead out this Ohio-Miami University student who thought it would be a great idea to hang a flyer in one of the freshman co-ed dorms back in early October titled the 10 Ways to Get Away with Rape. Yeah, I mean, oh, it's funny. It's a riot. The prosecutor, Butler County prosecutor Michael Moser, said, my concern was acceptance of responsibility. There is a realization by all concerned, especially the young man, that it was a dumb thing. This is one of those cases where you say, well, why make a federal case out of it? Well, let me wonder about this for the last minute or two here of the program. He's going to face less than a $100 fine. Nobody's ever going to know who he was. It's all been sealed. So we're not going to be able to figure out where it goes from here. But the top 10 was one, drug her drink. Slip her a roofie while she's drinking. Knock her out. Two, well, if she's walking alone, you know, through the campus, take advantage of her. Three, wear protection because you don't want to get caught. Four, if she's dumb enough to leave her window open, sneak in and teach her a lesson. Number five, if she's unconscious, it doesn't count. So don't back down if she's sleeping, he wrote. Be honest. If she says no to your advances, tell her you're going to drug her and rape her anyway. And of course, you know, the next one, practice makes perfect. The more you rape, the better you get, according to this person's wonderful top 10 list. And my favorite one, if you're afraid, Y-O-U-R, instead of, never mind. If you're afraid that she'll identify you, slit her throat. That's always good. Helps you get away with it. Never take a picture of or with the girls you rape and never give them your number. And, of course, by all means, rape, 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 because college boys get to live it up. Somehow, we're not to make a federal case about that. And we don't know who he is, so we won't know in 10 or 15 years if, well, he's the next one. Maybe he's the next Todd Akin. Who knows? Anyway, if you missed any portion of the program, therickssmithshow.com, that's where you go to get the podcast if you missed any of it. Also, get the Stitcher app on your smartphone. Take the program on the go. The fight continues. The fight rages on. We'll be back tomorrow.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk. It's coming like